Tonight on The Download, singer-songwriter Bob Mould, filmmaker and comedian Michael Showalter, and former Fenger High School principal and star of CNN's Chicagoland, Liz Dozier. And now, here's your host, a man who sprained his ankle kicking down the door, Justin Kaufman.
I have nothing to say.
All right, welcome to The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Quick correction, I was calling Don John. It's Don Norton who's in for Rob Martyr tonight. Just want to make that clear, Don Norton.
Bill, Bob, I answer to just about anything around
I know, but I feel bad. I should know that, you know?
That's okay.
I think I caught that coming in one ear out the other when I was walking in the studio. I'm like, John, I got it. It's John. I got it. It's Jim Johnson. We're cool. We got it. All right, Don Norton. Don, welcome to the show tonight.
Thanks.
To everybody out there, I hope you're staying dry, staying warm, staying fresh, staying strong tonight. Thanks for joining us. It's an honor to broadcast for you here on WGN Radio. We're with you till 11 o'clock. We've got a great show lined up tonight. Amazing lineup to wrap up a week that had pretty amazing lineups. We had Ani DeFranco earlier in the week, SNL's Adi Bryant, WTTW's Jeffrey Bear, and now Mark Baser. His show debuts tonight after Check Please. Psalm 1, the rapper Psalm 1. Tonight, we'll bring you more great stuff. Bob Mould, one of the great contrarians of rock and roll, the former Husker Du and Sugar frontman, just put out his 13th solo studio album, and he's going to be in Chicago next month. Mould considers this new record to be very dark and very personal. We'll talk with him about making music and what he considers to be the quote-unquote chemical chorus, the backbone, what it takes to write a song. Bob Mould on the show tonight, coming up later this hour. My guest tonight at the big table, former principal at Fenger High School, Liz Dozier. She became a household name here in town after the CNN show Chicagoland. She has since left Fenger High, and she's starting a new foundation to help fund education not-for-profits called Chicago Beyond. Looking forward to talking to her about what we don't usually see when it comes to Chicago schools, specifically Chicago high schools. The new movie, Hello, My Name is Doris, is hitting theaters this weekend. It stars Sally Field as an older woman that falls in love with her younger coworker. The film is directed by Michael Showalter. Showalter is one of the best comics working today, fresh off his Netflix series reboot of Wet Hot American Summer, and of course, part of the legendary MTV sketch show, The State. We're going to talk with him about the differences between working with his buddies from The State and working solo. That's what I want to know. Like, what you know, he's this is now his second feature film. He works a lot of stuff on his own, but he also continues to work with Michael Ian Black and David Wayne and so many people from The State and Stella and the other groups he was involved with. So we'll talk with Michael coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And how many times have you loved a movie, then revisited that movie a few years later, only to find out that it doesn't hold up? Well, that's the premise of a new film series at the Music Box called Is It Still Funny? Curator Mark Caro, you know that name. He was a Chicago Tribune entertainment reporter for years over here, is going to join me later in the show. And it's Friday night, so let's put Chicago entrepreneur and innovator Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. That's right. It's time for our weekly showcase featuring Gadlin's latest ideas. He brings them here before he brings them to his boss, Mark Cuban. And we get to give him the all-important feedback, yay or nay, on tonight's frying pan idea. That's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. And of course, you are very important to that, to weigh in on what do we think of Steve Gadlin's newest invention. News, weather, and traffic, like I said, with Don Norton. Also, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's kick it off. It's beautiful. I mean, how did it go from blizzard, snow? Now, I mean, it's still cold, a little brisk here, but Michigan Avenue is bustling right now. Why don't we start our show tonight like we start every show with the carryout? This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here's here are today's top stories. Did everybody see the cool helicopter hovering over Chicago yesterday? It looks so expensive. It was indeed the president's chopper as he was here for a press conference to sell the city on Supreme Court Justice Merrick Garland in Hyde Park. The president knows we really don't have a say, right? That's a Senate thing. And last I checked, the two senators in Illinois are being cool. So why were you here exactly? Something tells me you just wanted to go to the cafeteria. On the campaign trail, it's getting nasty, and mostly on the Democrat side, Senator Sanders said that Secretary Clinton was unqualified for president. When asked for a response, Secretary Clinton said, "Listen, I've lied to the American people several times in my career, so I know what it takes to be president." She's got a point. The Pope punted today and essentially said, "You know what, local priests, we write a lot of stuff from high, and it's really up to you to know how to rock it. Like that divorce communion stuff, you know, it's cool if you want to look the other way, but no go on gay marriage. We cool? All right, wash your hands before you get back on the floor." The Pope document is kind of like when Mariano's corporate says you got to wear black pants, but the store manager's like, "Nah, khakis are fine." Apartment rentals in Chicago are doing better than most other places in the country. I think it's because all of Chicago apartments are steps from the L, close to shops and restaurants with lots of sunlight. Yeah, you can walk to the lake. It seems that Libyan arms dealers are using Facebook to help facilitate deals. I knew it. First, they ask if you want to play Candy Crush, and then they ask if you want to buy an AK-47. Also, Libyan arms deals? What? Wait, I didn't know Ollie North was on Facebook. Cool. Just when you thought you couldn't get enough of Netflix and chill, Netflix announced a 25% hike on most streaming packages. The company's response? Hey, if we were responsible for you in any way getting cozy with your significant other on the couch, we want a bigger piece. It's that simple. In weather, certifiably early March, maybe February. It's beginning to look a lot like May. In sports, the Sox home opener actually happened today. I mean, it looked more like a Buffalo Bills playoff game than a home opener for the White Sox. Nothing like opening day here in Chi-Town. It looks like the Sox, like a groundhog, saw their shadow and promptly gave up 5 early runs to lose to the Indians. On the north side of town, the Cubs announced today Kyle Schwarber out for the year. Whew. Wow. Suffered a knee injury last night. God, darn it. Well, you know, in past years, I think Cubs fans would have thrown themselves from the roofs of Wrigley Field. But this year, because the Cubs team is just so deep, maybe they'll just throw themselves from the upper deck. Moving on. Hey, it's Javi Baez time, right? Am I right? Javi! The Blackhawks lost last night. It was a heartbreaker. So let's get through this weekend and just get ready for a first-round playoff win. You know, it felt like the Hawks' injury list last night read like an all-star roster, so I'm not worried. One more game, then it counts. The Bulls lost in Miami. You know, pass. No more ink for that team. The Masters is well underway, much to the excitement of people who really like to watch sports on TV. I mean, really like it. Or my grandpa, one of the two. Interesting news out of Valpo. Coach Bryce Drew, who guided the team to an NIT championship game, not to mention his heroics as a player, is leaving the school. He's moving to Vanderbilt to coach in the SEC. So that's kind of a perfect topper for this season's local basketball. The one team that wins anything, boom, coach is recruited to Tennessee. Even our coaches are recruited out of Chicago. And finally tonight, amazing video surfaced on a daytime fight between Nicolas Cage and Vince Neil in front of a Las Vegas hotel. It wasn't much of a fight, but it looked more like a trip, if you will. I didn't hear the sound, but I'm guessing it went like this. "You look bloated." "Me? You look bloated." "I'm so high." "Me too." Well, that's the carryout for April 8th, 2016. Hey, I wrapped your food up as haphazardly as I could because, you know, it's the least I could do. More to come tonight on The Download. Coming up right after the news, Bob Mould joins us. The iconic contrarian of rock and roll, great guitar player from the bands Husker Du, Sugar. He's got a new solo record. We'll talk with Bob about what it takes to make music right here on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, coming up, we're going to hear from Bob Mould here on the program. But first, it's time for the news with Don Norton. Don?
Yes, sir.
We got good weekend plans? I mean, you get to do some radio tonight, 7-11 Friday night. I mean, that's tops.
Doing a little radio tonight, but tomorrow, yard work. You take your pick.
What are you going to yard work? I mean, obviously, it's got to be tough to do yard work with all this weather, man.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, maybe I say I'm going to do yard work, but that's a little optimistic. if it doesn't snow, I'll do yard work. How does that sound?
I have a feeling you'd be like, I'm not going
to
do
yard work.
It's too
cold to do yard work.
It's too cold.
Yeah.
Next weekend. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, Bob Mould is out with a new record. It's called Patch the Sky. Mould is coming to the Metro on May 6th for an already sold-out show. Bob Mould is no stranger to Chicago. He's played here regularly throughout his career, and some of his bandmates actually live in the area. Mould has been called the contrarian of rock and roll. His days in Husker Du, the band Sugar, and his solo projects have given us so much memorable music. He's also an author. His memoir, See a Little Light, The Trail of Rage and Melody, was published in 2011. And he just keeps working, producing, touring. Just in his solo work alone, this is his 13th studio album. He's a national treasure. Bob Mould joins me now on The Download. Bob, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin. How are you this evening?
Good. How often do you get through Chicago?
Fairly regularly. The last time I was through for a long stretch was making this record Patch the Sky that we're out promoting right now. The album was actually recorded at Electrical Audio, which is in Chicago.
And it's
nice. You made mention of a bandmates of mine, Jason Narduzzi, my bass player, lives in Evanston. So the Electrical is a great studio to work at, and it's an easy commute for Jason.
that's important. Bob, yeah. I mean, for you, I mean, you recorded so much in your career. What are you looking for in a studio when you're deciding to put a record together? What's the process like, and what do you want out of a recording studio?
Well, it's, a number of things. I mean, over the years, I've either, built recording studios in Minneapolis to do work in. Sometimes I go to other people's home studios in very rural settings, and if that's the kind of vibe I'm looking for. With Electrical Audio, it's a great, there's two studios inside the building, and, they're almost as if they're fully living, functioning, active, recording museums in a way. The equipment is great. The vibe is great. At Electrical, the staff is so good to us. And, we just settle in and, it's like working in the most amazing bunker, which is what you want in a recording studio. As far as, mixing records, I actually bring the recorded tracks back to San Francisco, where I've been living for 6 years. And I've got a studio here in the Mission that I use for mixing the records. But, a lot of it's about vibe and a lot of it's about equipment and location. And it's always fun to, fun to try out new studios.
Right.
In the case of Electrical, we found one that's great for us. So.
Continuing on the idea of the process for writing music, I mean, for your solo projects, is it a collaborative process with your bandmates, or are you putting all the stuff together, bringing in the what you want to do, the arrangements, all that kind of stuff beforehand, or are you getting together and writing the music together?
I usually bring in the music fully written, with the idea that John and Jason will definitely improve any cursory ideas I have for rhythms or, bass guitar melodies. Mm-hmm. With this record, this is the third record that the three of us have recorded, as a band, so to speak, three of us in a room working with the same engineer. And all three records have had different creative processes behind them. You know, Silver Age, which was an album I wrote most of it in December of 2011, and that record came out the following mm-hmm. summer and did real well. Beauty and Ruin was an album that we recorded 2 years ago. It recorded and released 2 years ago. And, you know, as opposed to writing it all in 1 month, it was written, over downtime periods across 18 months of nonstop touring. So it was more of a patchwork kind of record. And, you know, oddly enough, the record called Patch the Sky, the new record, was written, you know, about a 6 month period of me writing at home, you know, sort of in isolation, sort of spending a lot of time just, you know, trying to come up with ideas and trying to come up with stories that, you know, that would fit together. And, you know, for this new record, wrote around 50 songs worth of music wow. and narrowed that down to the 12 songs that we have on the album. And that's, you know, once I've got the musical content narrowed down, then I really focus in hard on the storytelling and how to put things in order. That's, you know, it's the old-fashioned way of making an album, start to finish.
Let's talk about Patch the Sky. You say that the songs on the record on Patch the Sky are your salvation. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, without getting too deep into it, the last couple of years had a lot of personal loss, you know, losing parents, losing other friends. You know, just the stuff that happens as we get older, and it's not unique to me, but it's not subject matter that often makes its way into popular music, because that's generally a younger person's milieu, I suppose. And, you know, so that's, you know, I think that was the sort of the taking inventory, taking a moment, taking 6 months to reflect on, you know, recent events in my personal life and, you know, trying to make sense of that and how to move forward. And, you know, music for me, you know, as a small child, it was a salvation. You know, it was the one thing that I had in my life that could drown out the chaos of a real crazy sort of noisy childhood. And, you know, that's where it started for me. And, you know, in times of reflection, it really is the thing that keeps me going from day to day without making it sound too overwhelming. But some days it is pretty, right. Some days it is pretty overwhelming. I mean, that's what makes the work so good and enjoyable. And, you know, I keep, you know, year after year, I keep at it. And music is a really powerful thing in a lot of people's lives.
You've created so much music over your career. Can you go to a Husker Du record or to some of the early solo work and be able to hear a song and go, I remember exactly where I was at that place, or I know exactly what I was trying to see, you know, like where I was in my life? I mean, is this almost like chapters of your book?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's definitely, you know, the records are like mile markers for me. It's you know, I keep track of my life through the release dates of my albums. And as far as the emotional pull, you know, when I go back, yeah, I mean, I can remember the sentiment or the feelings and where I was when I came up with each of these records. You know, specific songs, the ones that I keep bringing forward in the current songbook, they change meaning over time. And, you know, some of them stay applicable mm-hmm. throughout my life. Some of them resonate deeper than others at moments. And, you know, they're beautiful like that. It's why I've always been loath to describe the meanings of songs too much, because I think not only for the writer or the performer, but also for the listener, it's, you know, the interpretations should be a little bit fluid. I don't know how specific they really need to be.
Yeah.
Is, you know, they're sort of universal ideas that, you know, they shape shift a little bit over time. That's the beauty of music, I suppose.
Well, I mean, you're so articulate when it comes to, you know, what music means. You talk about this concept on sort of explaining the record on about the concept of the chemical chorus. what music does to bring us in.
Yeah, it's the craft of songwriting, whether it's the longtime masters like Leonard Cohen and Elvis Costello, Dylan, people like that, or, you know, Jimmy Webb, who was such a great wordsmith. It's the art of storytelling. You have to establish a time and a place. You know, you sort of give people that, is it a cold, foggy night somewhere, somehow, something, you know, it, however you set the story up, you know, and musically using verses to lay out the story, and, you know, choruses are ultimately that great payoff, where it's that hallelujah moment where you get the easy words that everybody can sing together at once. And it's so strange you know, it's almost like a religious experience, or like, you know, when you go to church and you sing the, you know, everybody sings the choruses and somebody up there, you know, is telling the stories, and the set list never really change, I guess.
That's a good. I'm gonna think about that. You know what I'm saying? There's not a lot of variety when it comes to the set list at church. You're right.
No. Pretty much, you all know how.
All right. Let me ask you. You know, one of the things, you know, in the last couple of years before you came back, when you came to Merge Records, you were experimenting with different types of music. You were doing some electronica, you DJ work, expanding some. But you know, you came back. When we talked about the last three records with this group, you came back to the simple premise of guitar, drums, vocals. What brought you back to that sound?
I think, you know, through a period like the late 90s, for instance, the end of 1998, I walked away from guitar music and spent a number of years working, you know, and learning about electronic music and house music. And, you know, it just, you know, at that time, I felt like guitar rock had gotten a little overworked. You know, there was just so much of it, and it had gotten a little substandard. The production of electronic music was much more interesting to me. I learned a lot about sound and how to sculpt, you know, the small details into sound. You know, and then, you know, at the beginning, you know, around, I guess, 2011, when the autobiography came out and I was doing the work with Foo Fighters, and there was a large tribute show to my songbook at Disney Hall in Los Angeles in November of 2011. And to see a lot of, you know, it was a sort of a gathering of my peers and people paying tribute to the work. And I think that was the moment that led to that, you know, that quick burst of writing the Silver Age album, where it was really back to basics. And I think seeing a lot of other people, whether it's Ryan Adams or Dave Grohl or the Hold Steady, you know, hearing them sing my work back at me, I was like, oh, it's that simple. You know, and it's, you know, just trying, I guess, as I get older, I become more aware of what I do and what it means. It actually gets easier, you know, just staying a little bit closer to the source of all of it right now. That seems to be the thing that fits me well right now. And it also, with all the touring that we've been doing, you know, you talk about the show coming up at Metro.
Right.
When I go out and I see the simplicity of the three piece and what we do and how we, you know, how we approach the songbook, and I see how people are responding to it, it's like, it's really easy for me to do that. It's easy for Jason and John to do
right.
to do the what we do, and it's and people seem to be really enjoying it. It's actually that simple, you know. And I know that some people would criticize that as, oh, you're just doing what people want. It's like, well, you know, I've spent decades being that contrarian,
right.
and you know, for once, we're all just sort of vibing on this really easy thing that's really uncluttered and simple, and it's, you know, for those 90 minutes, people are having a great time. And you know, even with the heaviness of the lyrics on the new record and stuff, I mean, people are really responding, and people are just, you know, grateful to have this thing that we can all get in a room and enjoy. So it's really that simple sometimes.
Well, I was reading the Pitchfork review where they said you're at your best when you articulate anger at a high volume. Do you agree with that assessment? I mean, when you think about your career and everything that you've done over the time, I mean, does that sum up Bob Mould?
I think that's a simplistic look at a really complicated road. I mean, I think maybe that's how the road looks from way above on a GPS or on a map of the world.
Right.
But I, you know, being the one that walks the road every day, it's a little more than that. But it's a nice thought. I know the fellow who wrote that, and I know where he's coming from. So I'll take it as a compliment.
Bob Mould is coming to Metro on May 6th. It's a sold-out show, but you know, you're touring, and people get a chance to check out the new record, Patch the Sky. Bob Mould, I can't thank you enough for taking some time out tonight to talk to us here on The Download.
Thanks, Justin. And just, you know, Chicago's always been great. It's you know, one of my handful of amazing musical homes, and, you know, really looking forward to coming back and playing some shows for folks.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. A lot of people on Michigan Avenue tonight, which is nice. Even though it's cold out. It's cold outside, but everybody's out enjoying what Chicago has to offer on a Friday night. You got to love that, Pete. I thought Chicago would be in, would just go hide after the Kyle Schwarber news.
Ugh.
How you feeling? How you holding up?
I'm hurting.
It's a tough blow because I talked to, it was like the first thing, I mean, so many texts last night, friends, my brother, friend Tommy from Arizona or from Colorado, like all around the country. Did you see that Schwarber play? And every response was, meh, Baez, Solero move over, it's okay in the DL. The tone has changed.
I agree a little bit in that when the accident happened, I'm like, oh yeah, he's out for a couple of weeks on the disabled list, a month, you know, we're fine, Cubs are fine, but it's, and I think they will be fine, they're deep, but losing it's heartbreaking, you know, a young kid, second year in the league.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's tough. And it all, I mean, it plays to this idea of the Cub curse, I got to say.
Cubby occurrence, as Lou Piniella used to say.
What do you say?
Cubby occurrence, another Cubby occurrence.
Because, you know, the one testament to the Chicago Cubs, and I will give them credit, Theo Epstein, the owner, everybody involved, Joe Maddon, is that it is a deep team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I scratched my head a little bit at the trading deadline last year and even in offseason saying, trade some of this stuff. Get some big arms. Mm-hmm. Let's go for it. But, you know, this is why you don't. This is why you don't get rid of a Jorge Soler. This is why you don't get rid of a Javi Baez. You know, everyone's looking to shop those guys. And now they were sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
And now they get pressed into action left field, you know. And, I mean, you can't make up for the energy and the, I mean, just the sheer just skill of Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're not lost. Mm-hmm. Like, we were just talking before about the Arizona Diamondbacks lost A.J. Pollock and right before the season started. That's bad news. Was that maybe even opening day, but I think it was the season. Yeah, they don't have a backup. You know, that was their guy they were counting on. So the Cubs are in a better position, I mean, even though it sucks.
Yeah, I think they brought Kawasaki up. So
did they?
Antics.
Good. Well, I will always replace skill with antics. I'm a firm believer in antics.
A lot of vines coming out of Wrigley Field, a lot of karaoke. So at least we have that. No, it'll be fine. I mean, he's just young and he's just fun to watch. So that, I mean, that part hurts, but he'll come back and the Cubs will be fine.
As a Sox fan, can I give you an old
yeah.
story? The year that the Chicago White Sox won the World Series, I believe Frank Thomas had 30 at bats.
Yeah.
Like, he kept coming back, and then he'd go on the shelf, then he'd come back, he'd go on the shelf, and then he was out for the year, not even halfway through the season. And so there was the same kind of stuff where you're like, oh, that, how are you going to win without Frank Thomas? And they were able to go all the way and win the World Series. So Kyle Schwarber, Frank Thomas, I'm not saying the same player, but
yeah.
So you could make the argument it was worse in the sense for the White Sox lost the really the face of that organization early on in that season.
Uh-huh.
So there you go.
Thank you.
I'm excited, though. I mean, watching the Cubs last night, I'm in my fantasy league right now. The guy I'm playing.
Oh, you play fantasy?
I do. Oh, yeah. You didn't know that? the guy that I'm – the league I'm in is the Chicago League. Everyone is a Cubs fan. So White Sox are plentiful. You can get away.
Yeah, anybody you want.
It is Homer City. I mean, every player down at Kawasaki gets picked in the first fourth round. They're like, I think I'm going to go with Pedro Strop on this one. So the guy I'm playing has like five Cubs in the starting lineup. And I'm like, come on. And last night, what, they put up 14 runs?
Mm-hmm.
And they were all by the same players. It was like Rizzo, Hayward, Fowler. And Zobrist. Zobrist walked like 19 times. And I looked at it and I was like, what? Like, I went to bed, I woke up in the morning and it was like, you know, categories have shifted because the Cubs, I mean, they can pour on the offense like that. This mm-hmm. is a different Cubs team. So I think they're going to be fine. But what do I know? Coming up, as we'll be reminded on the text, you guys don't know what you're talking about. You ever play baseball? All right. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry we talked about it. That was last week. We were talking about the Blackhawks, and someone got so ferociously mad because we'd never played the game. It's true. And we are fans. We never say we're experts. We're fans. Although I'm pretty good at fantasy baseball. I don't want to make a big deal out of it. Coming up, Liz Dozier here on The Download.
Get down.
Well, welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. A new organization, Chicago Beyond, aims to fund not-for-profits who are trying to keep kids in school to help them get to college and ultimately keep them away from a life affected by violence. My next guest believes education and violence are tied together, She would know Liz Dozier was the principal at Fenger High School in Roseland. Dozier's attempts to keep kids off the streets and in schools was documented in the CNN television show Chicagoland. Last summer, she stepped down as principal, and she is now the managing director of Chicago Beyond. Liz Dozier is my guest tonight at the big table. It is my pleasure to have you on the show. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So excited to be here.
You stole the show in that show.
Aww.
That was supposed to be about Rahm Emanuel, and it became about you.
It was about the kids and about the great team out at Fenger. So.
Well, let's talk about Chicago Beyond, because this is something that you kind of talk about. This was anticipated. You talked about what are you doing next, and this is what it is. What is Chicago Beyond, and why are you involved?
Yeah, so Chicago Beyond is a privately held organization that really works to support two main issues. One is like educational attainment, so getting kids across the high school graduation stage, but not just that stage, really getting them across to a post-secondary option and graduated from that, whether that be college or trade school, just making sure kids have viable options in that domain. The second domain we're functioning in is just creating, helping to create safer communities, so making sure our kids, youth have safe places to go and safe places to be. And unfortunately, as we all know, that's becoming harder and harder here in Chicago. And so we aim to really support those.
And that's what you, support is the main word here, because you're not going to be doing that specifically. You're giving money to organizations that do that.
Yeah. So Chicago Beyond's goal is to really amplify and impact. And I just fundamentally believe that so many times people try to reinvent the wheel, and I just believe that there are phenomenal organizations here in Chicago and around the country that are already doing great work.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we need to reinvent the wheel? Rather, let's get resources and supports out to the organizations who are doing the work. I think it's bigger than just giving resources, though. It's also about thinking like long-term, how does the organization sustain itself? So we've built a great partnership with the University of Chicago, and they'll be studying the investments that Chicago Beyond makes.
Okay.
And the goal is to really spur smarter philanthropic and private dollars to kids.
I mean, this Chicago has a pretty strong philanthropic community. I mean, we know big names from MacArthur to Pritzker to the Community Trust. I mean, all with the idea of giving money to organizations and communities. What makes Chicago Beyond different? Are you just adding to that, or is there a fundamental difference in the approach?
So I think there are many seats at the table. I mean, the problem is so vast and so deep, we need many seats at the table. So
right.
That's a good thing that those folks are in the place. I think what makes us different is that we've got this rigorous component built into our model. So really studying what works and then getting that out to the larger community, not here only here in Chicago, but across the board to help spur, again, the smarter philanthropic and public investments, right? Because foundations can't solve the world. You know what I'm saying? It's really about the public dollar as well. I mean, another huge piece is that, you know, I'm literally right off the block, right? So I like was in Roseland working in the community. Like I completely and just utterly understand what organizations are going through and like supports that they need. And so I think that
like what do they need? I mean, what do they need that they're not getting right now?
I think it's unfortunately there's a lot. I think that an understanding when people who are making decisions about where funding goes, really a true understanding of what that means, right? So it's not just in, you know, one bucket where funding is directed, but really thinking about, I'll give an example. People like sometimes hate to talk about jobs. Now that Arnie's on the scene, they're talking about it more, but like there was an aversion to that, you know, like 2-3 years ago, 5-10 years. They don't really need jobs. It's really not about jobs. No, it's about getting people engaged. And so you have to talk about the economic piece of that. And so I think knowing firsthand that's critical, you know.
Well, I mean, you do know firsthand. I mean, as a principal at Fenger, and it was the storylines were in Chicagoland, trying to get the kids to stay in school, try to get them to think about their future, try to keep them out of conflict.
Right.
It was a big part of what you did on a daily basis. How does that experience help you at the foundation level?
So I think it's important as we're looking at where money goes, just having an understanding of the issue, not just from the data is good, right? And we're partnering with the University of Chicago, so obviously Chicago Beyond values data. It's built into the model of the organization. But just understanding the needs of people. So, you know, we talk about, you know, the summer's coming. People are getting worried because the shootings are going up. And we know what's the trend, how we're already trending this year. But I think just knowing the stories of the kids. So I would just think of, you know, my students. Jonathan was in town a few weeks ago for spring break. And we're sitting on 64th and Marshfield. So we were over in Inglewood. I wanted to see him before he went back to school. And he has to raise $2,000 to go back to college. And he's in school now, but, you know, for his next year's tuition bill. So we're sitting in the car, and he's like, okay, I got to come home, and I got to work. But he's like, I don't know where I'm going to live, Miss Dozier. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, he's like, well, I can't live here because I don't know if you know 64th and Marshall. There's a lot of stuff going on over there. And then he was, you know, in Cook County Jail for a while, had some gun charges, turned his life around. He's now at a university here in Illinois. So he can't go back there because there's gang stuff going on over there. He's trying to figure out where to live. Hmm. And I think the kid has to come home because he had to make the $200,000. Right. He's got to live somewhere, right? He can't live either places, but he has to choose one. I think having a true understanding of what that means and being connected to people who are in that type of circumstance lends a really unique perspective to an organization like Chicago Beyond. So when people are at the table talking that extra and, you know, not really making a whole lot of sense, and they're off on their philosophical tangents about what's right for the kids, I think I can get on that level too, but I'm also able to really ground it in the immediacy of what we're doing.
I was going to say, I mean, how often, there's not that often that there's going to be a Liz Dozier at those tables, people who've experienced it, people who've been sitting with Jonathan. But you don't see that. And I would say that that's across the media, of course, doesn't see it. Others, I mean, who are talk about these issues but don't actually see it. How important is it to see it?
I think I just feel it colors the story. It's almost like if you read about what's going on in Chicago in a newspaper and you're in, you know, I don't know, Alabama or Iowa, you can read about it and you get the numbers and you hear about the people that are dying. But there's something about the human element of being connected. I think that's what one of the best things that I walked away from Finger with is like being, you know what I'm saying, like being in that space with people. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. You know, I think we've gotten desensitized to the numbers of what's happening in Chicago. I mean, every time you turn on the news, like it's going up in this, it's going up in, you know, people think this, right? But it's nothing to know people who have been affected by violence, know kids that have died, you know, sat with a kid in the hospital and held their hand as they're dying. It's a whole different beast, you know, and you're coming with that type of insight, I think, to the space. And so I'm just proud to lead the work. You know, I'm just really proud to lead this work.
Liz Dozier, the former principal at Fenger High School, who's now the managing director at Chicago Beyond, an organization that is twofold. We're talking about education. We're talking about making sure that there's sustainability in the organizations that you're funding. We'll continue the conversation. Let's take a quick break. More with Liz Dozier here on The Download. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Liz Dozier.
Hey there.
Television star. Did you start with that?
I don't know about that. No. I don't know about that.
Former principal at Fenger High School. She was featured in the show Chicagoland on CNN, which was, I mean, 2 years?
I think it was a couple years ago.
Wow. You're now the managing director of Chicago Beyond, mm-hmm. An organization that's looking to fund not-for-profits who are trying to get kids in school, stay in school, move on to college, but also to make sure that the organizations are sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because it's two different ways to look at this. I mean, when you were at Fenger, you were making a difference. I mean, you were every day you were trying to keep a kid in school. In this case, you're going to be more in, I guess, what we would call the boardroom, right? For you, I mean, is there one model you like better than the other? I mean, are you going to miss the fact that you're, you know, on the front lines in a school like Fenger?
You know, people ask me that, and I feel like I'm not in a school, obviously, day-to-day anymore, but, like, that student I just told you about, Jonathan, I was literally just on the phone with him an hour ago, and I was talking to him about a summer job that he could get. I called him up. He's, you know, at school. He was, you know, not in class at the time. So, we were talking, and so I feel like I still talk to my students. I text with them. I see them. I was over in Roseland, I'm not even, like, a month ago, driving around. I probably saw 15, 16 kids. Just literally driving around. They probably think I'm, like, Miss Dude, you're still around. What are you still doing? Like, literally, like, yeah. So I'm still out in the mix. So I haven't gone.
Why
far.
Do you do that?
I really like my kids. I really like them as people. I think they're just super interesting. They're super complex. Like sometimes people think teenagers are so, like, you know, one lane of thinking, but mm-hmm. they're so complex. And my kids are so resilient. Like if you knew, like, I think of like Nina Jackson. Nina Jackson's actually what I was driving around with when I was out in Roseland. She's out in California now. She started out like really like had a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. We worked with her. She got a little bit better, started coming to school more, graduated, went off to Southern, right? We lost touch with her. I mean, by every statistic that you could probably come up with, this kid should not have even gotten to Southern, but she was there. We lost touch with her. We assumed she dropped out of school. Literally, this is when I was getting ready to resign from the board. I got an email in May, and she was inviting me to her graduation out in California from college, right? crazy enough as that is. But then I'm like, okay, what are you up to after that? And she sends me pictures. You guys are never going to believe this. Sends me pictures from the Oscars, like the real Oscars red carpet. And she's like there, and she's like, she's a documentary film major. So she was there doing like this project. But it was Nina freaking Jackson from like 112. Like, what the heck is Nina Jackson doing, like, you know what I'm saying, the Oscars red carpet? But I think it just goes to show that like our kids have this vast and boundless potential.
Well, your face lights up talking about it. I mean, you seem to have like an authentic relationship, and it makes you feel good that these kids are succeeding. And on the other side of the coin, and we saw it in Chicagoland, there are some that don't.
Yeah.
There's some that at the same Liz Dozier press on them about, like, you got to do this, or the attention, it sometimes doesn't work.
It's true. I mean, Jason, for those who might have watched the series, when I was out in the community a month ago, like, I saw him. He had moved, house was, you know, caught on fire, so he was like down the block, and went to see him, and he's really in the same situation. I mean, he's not in jail, thank God. He hasn't been back to jail, but he's not working. He's not in school. You know, it's the same deal. And so you have this like interesting juxtaposition of like the possibility and the disappointment, you know, but none of us as human beings can determine who we feel promised for and who do we not feel promised for. We don't get that privilege. We got to get it poured all into them, because you never know. Like, Nina should, by all accounts, she shouldn't, you know, she shouldn't be on the Oscars red carpet. She shouldn't be, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's like me, like, get me being here. Like, who the heck am I? I'm a principal. And even before, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be talking to you guys. I shouldn't be running this like multi-million-dollar foundation. Like, it's crazy. You know what I mean? It's crazy. It's good, but it's crazy.
Well, that show, Chicagoland, was supposed to be about Mayor Emanuel, and it was. He was the main character, and you were a secondary character. And the takeaway, and what we all remember, is Liz Dozier. Because, so you make these, but you make the opportunities. I mean, the opportunity was there to become a principal, to take that job, to work with those kids, and it shined through on the show. So for you, I mean, what draws you to this kind of work? What draws you to be a principal at Fenger High School?
I always thought that Fenger just had like this really amazing potential, right? I mean, it was chaotic, don't get me wrong. I mean, that first year we had 300 arrests inside the school building, like, and these weren't for like, you stole my pencil arrests, okay? This was like some weapons and some major gang fights. I mean, we're in a school. There's not even 300 days in a school year, okay? Like, there was a lot of challenge, but I always felt like I remember telling my inner circle team, because you can't tell everybody what you really believe because they think you're crazy. I'm telling my inner circle team, like, if we can make a change here, we can create a catalyst for like this national conversation about what's really possible for these type of kids, quote unquote, these type of kids, right? Because people already kind of write them off, you know? I think I've always supported the underdog since I've been like a kid, but you know, I think we did that in a lot of ways, right? We did create this national conversation. I mean, I didn't think we'd be on CNN and in New York Times bestselling books and all that. I mean, that was never necessarily the exact vision for it, but I mean, it's cool. I think it did create a really unique conversation. I mean, now, I'm not saying we started that, but now there's this whole conversation on opportunity youth, they're calling us. That's the phrase that now they're using, opportunity youth. But we've been talking about this, people in the community, like in the community. We've been talking about this for years.
And more and more. We've been talking about it on the download just the last couple of weeks. Natalie Moore came in with a book, The South Side, and, you know, and a big thing about segregation and resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fenger High School in Roseland is victim to the fact of resources. I mean, there's not a lot of opportunities that are, or let me put it this way, it's not equal to some of the other resources and opportunities at, say, some of the selective enrollment schools here on other parts of the city of Chicago. As a principal, how do you deal with it? How do you deal with an unlevel playing field?
You know, I think just principals across the city and teachers, like all these people in education, and we just try to do our best. And there's no, I don't have an answer for you. People try to, you know, I guess as Tupac would say, make a, you know, dollar out of 15 cents. Everyone's trying to, you know, pull things together and get people to volunteer and do things because, you know, there's just not enough. You know, when you talk about, for us, like, we would have every year 40% of our incoming freshmen coming in at a third or fourth grade reading level or below. So these are ninth graders coming at a third or fourth grade reading level or below. Mm-hmm. And we had non-readers. When we had our SIG grant, you know, our school improvement grant from the federal government for 4 years, great. So we had reading classes. We could like catch kids up on reading. We had a phenomenal teacher, Thomas Goodwin, who ran that. And I mean, he was moving kids 2 and 3 grade levels ahead in reading. Okay. Like, amazing. Once that was gone, like, what do you do? Do you know what I'm saying? And I think this is what principals and teachers face. You know, it's real. It's unfortunate.
Liz Dozier is my guest tonight here at the Big Table. We're talking about her new job. She's the managing director at the organization Chicago Beyond. Of course, she was also the principal at Fenger High School in Roseland, which was featured in the television show Chicagoland on CNN. We'll continue the conversation after the news. Stay with us.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Liz Dozier, former principal at Fenger High School in Roseland. She was a star of the show Chicagoland on CNN. She's now the managing director of the Chicago Beyond, the organization that is going to fund non-for-profits who are dealing with issues in the community, mm-hmm. like education violence. There's so much that we don't understand about someone listening to WGN Radio right now about what's happening in areas like Roseland. I mean, for you to be a principal, to be at the front lines and to see that, mm-hmm. you know, what don't we understand about a 15-year-old kid who's trying to graduate from Fenger High School? What don't we understand about that?
You know, I don't want to make assumptions on what people know or don't know. I think something to keep in mind is that the 15-year-old at Fenger is really no different than the 15-year-old you tuck in your own home, I bet, in your home. You know, they're no different. They face, you know, our kids face these enormous odds, you know, and they're so resilient. Like, if people knew, like, truly knew, like, what our kids have to go through sometimes even to get to and from school.
Right.
You know, like, just to and from school. And, you know, to see, you know, their friends dying. You know, I had a student in my office. This was, like, several years ago now. I think, like, probably three or four. He was literally suffering, I believe, from, like, post-traumatic stress disorder. The kid had lost, like, 10 other friends, like, in the last, like, 5 to 6 years. And he just wasn't, like, functioning on all cylinders mentally. He just wasn't functioning like that, you know, and I truly believe it's from what he experienced and saw. And he's no different than, I mean, he was, I think, 17 at the time, no different than the 17-year-old that's probably in Highland Park, right? No, it's no different. He's just got amazing things.
How do you adjust as a teacher, as a principal, as an educator? How do you adjust to make sure that 15-year-old who's seen 10 of their friends die, who's affected by violence on to and from school, how do you adjust to make sure that they get the right education, because there's so many obstacles that are standing in their way?
Yeah, and this is where I think the social emotional supports are critical. You know, people talk about, well, the kids need to this blah 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 education, and that's true, right? But if the child is suffering from, like, mental health issues because they can't focus because they're doing all this out in the community, you've got to address that. So I believe it's like hitting both, like the education piece, obviously, you know, the reading and the writing and, you know, those types of things, right? But it's also like, you know, we at Fenger, we had built in social emotional supports, anger management, grief counseling. Like, we had built in mental health support mm-hmm. into the course of our school day, you know, and that was huge. And what we're trying to do too, I think, with Chicago Beyond is, again, I support the work that matters. We've got these two, like, GO innovation challenges, right? So we know that it's really, really, it's not that our kids lack potential. I think that narrative needs to be limited. It's they have potential, right? It's like they lack opportunity and access. And that's what right. we're trying to create through our GO Innovate challenges, through our investments. We've got two GO Innovation challenges now. One's around college. So we're trying to source ideas, have people submit their proposals via our website. You know, if you have a program that works for getting kids across the stage to college, like, please, like, you know, out of proposal.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah,
right.
if you know of how you're working with the opportunity youth, kids who aren't engaged in work and in school and who are just kind of out there. 50% of our African American males between the ages of 16 and 24 are, like, unemployed and not in school. Crazy, you know?
Yeah, right. And that feels like that is thrown out, and we all go, wow, that's crazy. And
yeah.
then we move on with our lives. There's not a lot that goes into that.
I
mean, from your vantage point as a former principal and now with Chicago Beyond, what's it going to take to address that issue? I mean, to say that African-American teens, you know, from 15, 16, 17 aren't getting any work. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's even part-time jobs. There's not even summer programs in the city of Chicago have dwindled. I mean, what is it going to take to give kids an opportunity and give kids that access through jobs?
So I think I'm glad Arnie's on the scene. I think the work he's, you know, just
Arnie
put out
Duncan,
there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Arnie
yeah.
Duncan is here. I think he's going to draw attention to it and shift kind of how people are thinking about it. So I think that's good. There are several other organizations. You know, the mayor's office is doing their part on it. It's I don't think it's about any one particular program. It's really about a concerted effort for us all to pull together. And I think Chicago Beyond just happens to have a seat at that table now. But it's really about all of us, you know, and not just all in terms of foundations or all of us in terms of, like, nonprofits. It's also like, what is the everyday person doing? You know, like, everyone has, like, a role in this, you know, even if it's just being conscious, like, truly conscious of what's happening. And, you know,
as someone who, like myself, you know, listening to being a part of this conversation, but understanding that Chicago does have challenges and would say, you know, concerns and epidemics when it comes to violence, mm-hmm. what can be done to stem the tide?
So I think it's for every person, it's different. Like, I mean, for you just having, I think having me on and being able to talk about maybe that help you, you're helping raise the consciousness level of people. Maybe they'll hear the story of Jonathan or of Nina and think a little bit differently when they hear that news story tonight on the news that somebody got shot, you know, like maybe it'll mean something different, you know? So I think everyone, you know, plays their own part in their own role. Some people will now go hopefully volunteer maybe at their local school, and maybe they're not even in the community of opportunity youth, but maybe they, you know, even volunteering at their own local school and raising the consciousness of their own children, you know, to be able to filter out what's true and kind of what's some other type of false narrative.
Liz, you grew up here.
I did.
What drew you to this work? I mean, why are you not in corporate boardrooms? Why are you not doing your own interview show? What brought you to educating? What brought you to philanthropy? Those kind of things.
So I had to give this speech a couple years ago, and my assistant principal at the time, Tasha, was really pushing me to talk about that. And I was like, well, you know, I got into it because I believe it. And she's like, well, she was a counselor by trade, so you know, she's totally like, what is that? And what got to that and that? You know, like all that counseling stuff. Anyway, so we got down through her counseling. I guess it really comes out of me from my dad. My dad is very similar and had a very, like, almost identical situation that you would think of for the youth that I'm serving, right? He was in foster care. He was in jail for years. I mean, like, he's very similar. And I think, you know, my dad has never really had the opportunity to be free, you know? Like, he's never had the opportunity to be free, but not just free in terms of, like, physically free, but in all other ways. Mm-hmm. You know, he still struggles with, you know, reading and those types of things. But he's one of the smartest people you ever meet. You know, and so I feel like when I do this, I really do this work in honor of him. I really do it in honor of him because, you know, his life is, you know, he's still alive, obviously, but, you know, his kind of gateway or window is kind of past, you know, but these kids that we're servicing, you know, across the city and not just us, right, but just us as a community are servicing are just like him. Smart, amazing, great human beings, you know.
Let me ask you about Chicagoland. You know, as you think about it, 2 years since it's been on the air. Did you like that experience? Is that like, I mean, do you see that as like, that was great to be a part of? Did you say, I don't know if I really wanted the light shown on me? What's your, as time creeps on, when you think back to that program, what's the first thoughts that come to your mind?
Well, first of all, I didn't even know we were going to be that big of a part of it. Like, they came in originally, they wanted to shoot some B-roll in a school. So we thought the concept of where what it started to what it ended up, totally, when we started out, didn't even know it was going there. As it became more apparent, they're with us filming 4 to 5 days a week, you know. Right. So obviously, as time went on, you know, we knew we were going to be a little bit bigger part of it, although not until we saw it on TV to realize how big of a part of it we were. I feel proud of it because I told my team this when I was like, proposing the idea to them, like, if we should participate. Like, what if this could change how people see other people? Like, when you get to know the stories of others, like, it becomes harder to become desensitized. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when you know the story of Lee or of Jason or of, you know, whoever that might have been on the show, or even my story, right? Maybe you feel like, hey, maybe I should not judge that person or not throw them into a bucket, or maybe I need to do something, or how can I step up? And I felt that was, I hope it was powerful for people in that way.
Do you feel that because of programs like Chicagoland, or even the way that the media has latched on to the story of violence in Chicago, that we are moving forward in terms of getting away from stereotypes or desensitizing, that we want to know more about the victims or the criminals? Like, do you feel anything's changed, or is it all the same?
No, I think that people are becoming more invested and involved. I think the narrative is changing. I mean, I think it is. I mean, is it changing 100% in the way it needs to be? No, you know, but I mean, I think things evolve over time, and hopefully Chicago Beyond can help spur that by helping to raise like awareness of our kids and of what really matters. And hopefully when we learn, right, when we make these investments, and the whole premise of Chicago Beyond is to do and then learn too. So hopefully when we learn what works, we can spur people in the right direction.
You grew up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You were on a show called Chicagoland. Mm-hmm. You got Chicago in your blood.
I do.
What do you think of the city? I mean, for, you know, your new organization is called Chicago Beyond. Mm-hmm. What does Chicago do to inspire you? And what does Chicago need to work on?
Chicago's got a lot of heart. I don't care what anybody else says about Chicago. Chicago has got a lot of heart. The people in Chicago are real. You know what I'm saying? Like, people in Chicago aren't going to beat around the bush with you. If they don't like you, there's an issue. People in Chicago, basically, they're going to let you know, you know? And so I appreciate the realness in that and the truth in that. I think, like, we're like all cities, right? Like, L.A., New York, and Atlanta, we've got stuff to work on, right? We've got this to work on. We've got economic issues to work on. work on. I mean, there's we've got our things. But I think what I love about Chicago is we're real about it, you know? It's almost like, I shouldn't even say this, it's probably totally bad to say, but like it was almost when, like, when, you know, people came when Trump was getting ready to speak mm-hmm. and people were like, not here. Now, whether or not you agree or disagree with Trump, I mean, that's to me is of no consequence. But I think it's interesting that people rally together. And I think that that's the spirit of Chicago, regardless of him, right? It was the spirit of Chicago of like, here's what we're getting ready to do right here. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of stuff. So
Liz Dozier is the managing director of the new organization, Chicago Beyond. She's also the former principal at Fenger High School, which was documented in the television program on CNN Chicagoland. Liz Dozier, thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
Come on out and join Lou Manfredini on Saturday, April 23rd from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. for a live broadcast of the Mr. Fix-It Show from By the Yard Outdoor Furniture Store in Vernon Hills. It's time to prep your outdoor space for spring. I know what that means. All right, I talked about this before. I have a little, like, I don't know what you even call it. It's just kind of like a little space in front of my place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed this happened earlier. One of my neighbors cleaned up like a bunch of trash
mm-hmm.
just a couple weeks ago when it thawed out. And I was like, that's so nice that you did that. And then just to, after the just this weekend, I walked out and there was just garbage. Mm-hmm. There was like a Slurpee cup. There was like a McDonald's wrapper, like a Cheetos, package. And I was super mad. I'm like, is someone just dumping their trash on the sidewalk? Like, I'm like, how dare you litter? Have some respect for the town you live in. I turned into Rush Limbaugh. And then I realized what was happening is that there's a park across the street. And by Sunday night, the garbage bin that they have there is mm-hmm. overflowing,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's up, and then the wind starts kicking in because of this weird weather, and it's just blowing towards my yard. But I had like sworn off society. I was like, who is drinking a Slurpee with a bag of Cheetos and a bunch of fast food wrappers all in the same, and then just decided, I'm going to put it right here. And I thought it was all, and I was like, and then I looked down at the next yard, and there was garbage there too, and I was like, who? We need a town meeting. There is a traveling gang of litterers. And then I quickly realized it was the so I have to figure that out. Do you think I go to the park district and say, hey man, figure out your garbage?
Yeah.
Or do I go over there with like a stick and tamp it down? Like on Sunday nights, that's part of my routine.
It's an open container?
No, it's a bin. It's like a garbage bin.
You know,
But by Sunday, especially on a nice weekend,
so
it just rises high.
So it's too. So the
yeah, so thicken, it's just yeah. getting stuff at the top.
I guess you could get in there with a stick.
Yeah. That could be like, okay, what do I have to do on Sunday? I got to make food for the next day. I got to watch vinyl. And I got to go tamp down the garbage in the park across the street.
Yeah, I don't know.
I realize that's what's happening.
Yeah, because littering is the worst.
It is the worst, and I thought it was like serial littering. I really did. I thought it was like somebody who was like on the loose. Like I was going to put up posters on the tree that was like.
I'm with you though, man. Like when you're like walking behind somebody and you just see them just like, you know, chewing gum and tossing the wrapper on the, it just infuriates me.
Throwing things out their car window. Yeah, I don't see it as much as I used to, but yeah. And then I guess it infuriates you even more when you do see it because you're like, come on.
Lately, I've seen, and this is over the past couple of years, I've noticed a proliferation of orange peels.
Hmm.
Like, are you just like, somebody's like walking down the street peeling an orange and then like flipping the peels on the street?
You're like, it's organic. It's from the earth. It's from a tree.
It really bugs me.
I like, all of my litter is, it has to be biodegradable. If it's biodegradable, I'm like, it can be on the street.
It can be fine.
All right, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, I'm very excited about my next guest, Michael Showalter. Michael Showalter, a comedian who's part of The State, the legendary sketch comedy show on MTV back in the, I guess it was early 90s now. Wow. He's done films. He's done a lot of TV. He was part of the group Stella with Michael Ian Black and David Wayne. He is the director. It's his film. He's the director and co-writer of the film Hello, My Name is Doris, which is a great film. Sally Field, Pete and I both saw the film.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, you know, for it's interesting to me because she is so dynamic. We all know Sally Field.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to play a comedy and to kind of play an oddball, at first you're like, oh, Sally Field, is she going to try too hard? Like, I don't know, it sounds terrible because she's so good. She's mm-hmm. an Oscar winner. But
yeah, we like her.
It isn't necessarily and this is by no offense to anyone, but it's not an Oscar film. It's an indie film that is out, so you're like, is this going to be too much?
Yeah, it's not a Steven Spielberg movie that's coming out on Christmas Day.
Right, right. It's yeah, and it's not, you know, for your consideration.
Yeah.
It's Hello, My Name is Doris. And it's a comedy. But Michael Showalter's created this sort of unlucky in love kind of genre because he did he has a cult following with the movie Baxter, which was a movie he did. He starred in back in 2005 where he's just kind of like this guy who's dopey, who's unlucky in love. Nothing goes right for him. And in a way, Sally Field plays that same character in this movie. So it's worth the look. I mean, I got to say, I mean, if you're I don't know. I mean, the movies that came out, listen to Richard Roper on the Rokan show with Anna DeVantes today and. Doesn't sound like any of this stuff's going to be any good.
Yeah.
Like, he had done The Boss with Melissa McCarthy.
I love the commercial because her hair just, like, cracks me up.
And everybody loves her, and she's, not because we think she's, like, you know, the darling of, anything she touches, but she has a track record. We've seen her be funny
mm-hmm.
in so many different scenarios where you're like, that is laugh out loud funny. And so every time she shows up on anything, you're like, it's got to be funny.
I was very excited to learn that she is now signed on for the Gilmore Girls reboot on Netflix because that was a huge controversy.
Was she not going to do it?
She wasn't.
She's too big now?
Well, that was what everybody thought. Like, oh, you know, she's too big. She's a movie star, blah, blah, blah. She's not coming back to the Netflix show. And then she... Hold on, I gotta get
you gotta
this
get
phone. Hold on for one moment.
Oh man, how many times I gotta tell
Studio.
You?
Pete?
We'll be back in a minute.
Oh, okay. I'll come out in a second. Okay, thank you.
It's great.
That's how the magic works.
How many times do I tell you to turn the phone off during the broadcast? You turn your phone off. Pete walks around with a studio phone on his belt, an old landline, to the security desk. No, you know who that's probably is Mark Caro. Is on the show tonight.
Oh.
He's up. He's going to be here at 9:30, and we're going to talk about Is It Still Funny, which is his his movie film fest at the Music Box Theater up on Southport, which is a great, unbelievable idea.
Yeah.
Because how many times have we said, that doesn't really hold up? You mm-hmm. see a movie when you're a kid, and you're like, oh, I'm never going to like a movie as much as I like this movie. And then you watch it a couple of years, it shows up on TBS, and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, you got to watch this. And they're like, this isn't as good as I remember. So that definitely is something that I think is a shared feeling.
Yeah.
And Mark has taken he's taken four films, and he's going to show them on the next four Tuesdays at the Music Box in a series he's calling Is It Still Funny?
That's great.
So we'll talk with him coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. So Mike Showalter and Mark Caro coming up. And then, of course, 10 o'clock, The Frying Pan. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, Michael Showalter, one of the geniuses behind The State, Stella, and Wet Hot American Summer, both the movie and the Netflix series, has put out a new film. It's called Hello, My Name is Doris, and it stars Sally Field as the main character, Doris. Showalter showed this movie at South by Southwest last year and was picked up for distribution, and it's in theaters now. It's a movie that has Sally Field reorganizing her life after the death of her mother and her budding pseudo-romance with a younger coworker. Michael Showalter co-wrote the screenplay and directed the film, and he's my guest tonight on The Download. Michael, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
You've done a lot of great work, and I followed your career, both film and television, The State, I mean, all the way down. But this project's a bit of a departure for you. What drew you to this project, and particularly to the character Doris?
I mean, it's a great comic protagonist, and as a writer and an working in comedy, like always looking for a new way to be funny. And this character, Doris, just seemed like a brand new kind of comic protagonist that I hadn't seen before. And she's, you know, she's mischievous and she misbehaves and she's inappropriate, but totally unique and relatable, even though she's very different than my, you know, she's a woman of a certain age who's isolated and but she's actually going through things that I think we can all identify mm-hmm. with and relate to.
this isn't just a movie about an older woman who longs after a younger man. I mean, there's a lot of other issues in this, like the loss of her mother, grieving, her hoarding illness. But the movie balances those storylines. It really is about a coming-of-age story, if you will, for Doris.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I've said this before, it's sort of like a John Hughes movie, like Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles. Mm-hmm. She's falling in love for the first time and getting her heart broken and finding her way in the world. Even though she's in her 60s, she's really deciding for the first time who she is and how she wants to be. And she's starting over. And that's part of the message of the movie, is it's like never too late to start again. You're never too old to be new, what Sally says, yeah.
Well, let's talk about Sally Field. Tremendous in this movie. What was it like for you to direct Sally Field? What was the intimidation level like in working with Sally?
Intimidation level was high. I had gotten to know her a little bit by the time we started shooting. We'd met a few times and for coffee and had done a little bit of rehearsing and stuff. So I knew her well enough to, like, approach her. But, yeah, I mean, what do I have to offer a two-time Oscar winner, iconic movie star? But I also knew that this was a really challenging role and that she needed a director. And so it was kind of like I had to kind of pretend to be someone that could help her. You know, like I just was like, she needs me to be a director, so I'll pretend to be a director.
I read she had some questions about how you were going to approach it, because it is a comedy, and there's a lot of ways you could go. And your background on projects like Wet Hot, it's hilarious stuff, but it's much more, it's oddball. It's kind of off the radar kind of stuff. How did you convince her that you were going to approach it in a different way?
Well, I mean, if you see the movie, the comedy is pretty broad. I mean, I think you can see that I'm the same person that did Wet Hot and Stella. I think you can see my sensibility is here in the movie as well, both in terms of the comedy, but also just visually, you know, it's costumes and people, you know, it's an alternate reality from our own somewhat, but the drama is just heightened in this movie. And so I kind of just said, I'm going to play the comedy for all it's worth, but I'm also going to play the drama for all it's worth. And in a way, I just had to ask her to make a leap of faith that those two tones could live together in the film. And she took a leap of faith. I mean, for her, it was a risk to give herself to the project. Obviously, she's really out there in this movie. And I think she'd put a lot of trust in me. And I felt the weight of that, too. I felt really like I really owed it to her for the movie to be good. You know, I really didn't want to let her down.
What I like about this is, as you've mentioned it before, that this really is a subversive film. And when we think of subversive films, you don't think necessarily a Sally Field or even, you know, hello, my name is Doris on the outset. But it is, because you're really taking a different look at these relationships, these characters, the idea that it's Sally Field that's looking for someone as opposed to like Jack Nicholson or any others, you know, in the kind of movies where they're lusting after somebody younger.
Yeah, I guess so. And I mean, it's sort of hearing you say that, and I agree with you, but it's sort of sad that that's true. Like, it's sad to think that something like Sally Field, like if you see the movie, it's not like, oh my God, gross, you know, at all. It's not like that at all. She's a very attractive, charismatic woman, and her character is eccentric to be sure, but I don't think we never wanted to make this like a, you know, oh my God, you know, this is not Dirty Grandma, you know,
right.
That's not what we're doing. It's a movie about into the love story. It's just two people that are both in a lot of ways in a similar place of looking to make connections in New York City, and they're both kind of lonely and looking for companionship, and they find each other. It's too bad that that's subversive, because and it sort of says a lot about how biased we are about gender and how people should be and shouldn't be. And I just think ultimately these two characters, Sally Field's character and Max Greenfield's character, are just two people looking for a connection.
Yeah. And that plays, I mean, it's similar in your other feature film, the 2005, you did Baxter. And there's some similarities between the characters, both kind of unlucky in love, kind of walk in the same step, maybe on the outside, but finding what I really liked about Hello, My Name is Doris was the idea that, you know, from the outside, maybe in the corporate world, she was a goofball. Maybe in the you know, her family, she was a little bit of an oddball. But when, you know, she bought into it and she followed the character to the club and she wore her clothes and everyone on the outside in her life considered her to be an outsider, she found a hipster culture that was inside, that that she was, that they accepted her. It seems to be the kind of character you like to work with.
Yeah, I like characters that are a little bit out of step with, you know, the mainstream, let's say. Like, the status quo doesn't necessarily understand them, or they're not, they don't fit in, but it's not for a lack of wanting to fit in. It's just like they just don't. But they're true to themselves, and they're searching for an authentic connection to somebody that does understand them and that does see the world the same way they do. And there's definitely, Doris is very much of a, and the Baxter very much exist in that same kind of world. And they're fragile. They're fragile people because the world is threatening to kind of eat them up and spit them out, you know, mm-hmm. because they're not aggressive about it. And so you're kind of hoping that they can find their way. And I don't know what it is about those characters. I've always rooted for the underdog.
You mentioned that Hello, My Name is Doris has a lot of the same sort of similarities as other projects that you've done. It's definitely a Michael Showalter joint, if you will. But but you've collaborated with a ton of people, including your fellow castmates from The State, from Stella. And when I was thinking about it, we were just talking before the interview about the idea that you're almost like in a rock, you know, you're in a band. The idea that you're an ensemble member and you collaborate, but this is almost, when you do Hello, My Name is Doris, it's almost a solo project. Talk right. about the differences between working in an ensemble with all the with David Wayne and all the others that you've worked with to doing a project on your own.
I mean, just like a band, the band has its own sound, and then as individuals, we have our own sound. So to take that metaphor a little bit further, mm-hmm. and whether it's working with David, you know, I think like Stella with Mike David and I is sort of the most, it's been, you know, been described as like Dadaist comedy. It's really digressional, very much we go into these sort of, the humor is in the digressions. The humor is in the total lack of any kind of relationship to reality. It's like we're bending reality around and playing with convention and all those different things. And then Wet Hot is a little bit more center, and that's just David and I. And that, I think, is sort of lives in this world somewhere in between a spoof and then a sort of a sincere teen comedy or whatever. And then when I'm left to my own devices, I think I tend to veer more towards the bittersweet, sad, but funny, but also with a lot of heart and a lot of bittersweetness and melancholy to it. When you sort of strain out those other influences, and I'm sure with David and Mike, you'd find obviously them, they also have their own individual sound when they're doing their own thing. But as a unit, you want to kind of lean into what you are organically overlapping on. And so with David and Mike, I think we overlap on that zany, funny, crazy thing. And that's, I love doing that.
Yeah. For you, looking forward to the next projects, I mean, do you see yourself trying to find more Michael Showalter material or characters that challenge you and you want to keep you in that arena, maybe even in film, as opposed to the television work you've done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I want to do both. I loved the dramatic aspects of Doris and absolutely want to continue doing that kind of work. I mean, I love drama as an audience member, and it was sort of new territory for me and a little bit scary to kind of go into it, not sure if I could pull it off, but I love doing it. And so I'd love to continue trying to make work that's both funny but also dramatic at the same time. That's kind of where I'd love to take my solo career, as it were.
The film is called Hello, My Name is Doris. It stars Sally Field. The director and co-writer is Michael Showalter. He's my guest tonight. Michael, thanks so much, and congrats on the movie and continued great success.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's a download here on WGN Radio, 312-981-7200. Comedies that haven't held up. How about that? That's going to be the story we're going to talk about coming up here at 9:30 with the Movie Film Fest. I guess it's a fest. It's for it's a series.
Mm-hmm.
At the Music Box. Is It Still Funny with Mark Caro? He's the curator. He's going to join us coming up after the news here. I'm excited to talk to him because I was trying to rack my head about movies that haven't held up. That I was like, oh, it's so good. And then I'm like, not so good.
Yeah.
You know what is one? It's not a comedy. I was just thinking, I just watched it the other day and I was like, I was trying to get a friend to watch it with me. It's New Jack City. I know. I thought when I was a kid, I'm like, this, wow. And then I watch it, I'm like, oh my God, it's terrible.
Doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hold up.
Yeah, I don't.
I know it's a hard question, but there's a lot of it. I mean, there's.
Yeah, I get Night Shift. I remember liking that when I was a kid with Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler and Shelley Long. I love that movie.
I really like. I like the people involved with this, and I want to get them on the show too. But I just saw a little bit of Big Fat Greek Wedding. Again, they're showing it on HBO because Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 is mm-hmm. out. And that was one that I remember being like, oh, this is so charming. I love this movie. And watching it again, I'm like, mm. So, but again, I'm not putting in judgment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a classic. This is about rewatching it where you're like, eh. We'll talk about the four movies he's chosen to really question whether or not they hold up. I think, you know, another one that I watched, and this is funny because this was – I really wanted my son to see it. It was during the Star Wars craze of Christmas time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, I know. Spaceballs.
Yes, Spaceballs.
And I go, Spaceballs, man, because it was on. I'm like, oh, you're going to love this. I've like made some popcorn. I'm like, you're going to love Spaceballs. And I'm like, this is not working. Like, the jokes were not there. Like, it was
like
hard.
You didn't like it?
I didn't like it. He didn't care.
Yeah,
like the parody is just gone.
Doesn't
you know, like
work.
I mean, I think parody has evolved over time. So I think that the idea of a Star Wars 1 parody, I guess, is not that original of an idea. Even though that was an original idea, if that makes sense. So, but the jokes even in that were like
landing. Yeah,
landing. It's Mel Brooks, you know. But there's a lot of like stop in the middle, like we ran out of movie money for this movie kind of stuff. And I'm like, all right. You know, when you have that, you're just like, all right, so. I'm trying. You know what I haven't watched lately that I would like to watch again is How I Got Into College. Do you remember that one?
No.
I don't remember any of the actors in it. It was on probably Comedy Central like in the 90s, but it was right around the time when, you know, you're just kind of getting ready for college. And I remember being in love with that movie. And I have not seen it around much, and I'd like to see it again. I think Jonathan Silverman's in it, maybe, or a knockoff
something,
of that,
yeah,
something like that.
Something.
And I just know going back, I'd be like, what was I thinking?
I watched fairly recently Can't Hardly Wait,
mm-hmm.
which I loved when that came out. And, yeah, it's still good, but I remember, like, loving that movie, like, thinking that was, like, the best romantic comedy, like, the new generation of John Hughes movies. And it's still good, but you know, it's like,
Another movie that I just watched, on HBO and I was worried about was Old School, you know, because that's now been 10, 15 years and I watched it and I laughed my ass off.
Still holds up?
It totally holds up.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
It's so funny. And we're going to have Scott Armstrong on next week. He's one of the, he wrote that movie. He's from Chicago. And he's the guy who created Dice on Showtime, which is coming out, I think, this weekend, this Sunday. But, yeah, that I was afraid because I'm like, maybe it was like a moment. You know?
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the idea, too, of how it's been received or who consumes it. You know, like especially if you're talking about college movies, you're like, oh, my God, now everybody watches that movie or it's quoted by everybody. And you're just like, I don't know if I really want to be in that space, you know, but...
What was the Jason Segel movie with Kristen Bell where they were in Hawaii? Jack McBrayer's in it. Do you remember that one that came out a few years ago?
Yeah. The one with Russell
Brand. Brand. Yeah.
What was the name of that movie? Anyway, does that Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Yeah, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Listen to that, and people say I'm slipping.
They that one. I guess this doesn't count because that was one that I watched in the movie, and I didn't laugh like at all. And rewatched it, and I was like, oh,
so it's the reverse.
Yeah, the reverse. So this is, we can Mark has he can do that. That'll be his next project.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. That's coming up here after 9:30. And at 10 o'clock, Steve Gadlin, local entrepreneur, local innovator, local inventor, will be in studio. He, of course, the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, which won on Shark Tank. Now he's got Mark Cuban as a principal investor. Before he brings new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download. So we'll be doing that at 10 o'clock. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight when Patty Vasquez takes over with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Well, there's so many films out there that shape the way we think, the way we live. We saw them in college and we said, that right there is the funniest film I'm ever going to see. And then the movie comes out on AMC or TBS or HBO and you watch it again and you ask a bigger question. What? What was I thinking? This is just not funny. Well, that's the premise behind the new series at the Music Box Theater up on Southport. It's called Is It Still Funny? And it will showcase four films for the next four Tuesdays. The curator is former Chicago Tribune entertainment writer Mark Caro, and he's with me tonight. Mark, good to see you.
Great to see you.
See you. Good to be back in the building.
It is. It's fantastic. I love this building.
All right, so let's talk about this. This is a relatable idea. What made you say this is something I want to bring to the Music Box?
This is an idea I've had for a long time, and just in terms of nagging at me, because it's like you said, you watch comedies and you go back to them, and it's like the river's never the same twice, right? Comedies are the river, and you'll go back and you'll think, boy, you know, I remember seeing this movie when I was a kid or when I was in college or whatever else, just like you said, and you'll try to recreate that experience, and the movie has changed with relation to time. It's like, you know, tragedy plus time equals comedy, but comedy plus time equals what? You know, trying to figure that out. But then there's also just that sense of like you're sitting on your couch watching it on demand or something. It's just not the same. So what you do is you say, hey, kids, you know, Return of the Pink Panther was really a funny movie. And we're going to watch Return of the Pink Panther. And they're sitting there on the couch and you're going, boy, I don't remember there being 10 minutes between every laugh in this movie. And part of it is that the times have changed. And part of it is that the circumstances changed because, you know, you're just like watching it at home and comedies at home aren't as funny. And so at least with the Music Box, which is, you know, the kind of classic movie house in Chicago and really has, you know, the people who go there know film. They love film. The people who run it love film. They're fantastic. So if you could at least equalize the experience of you're going to sit in a dark room. It's not even stadium seating. Someone told me once that stadium seating is bad for comedies because the laughs don't roll up the aisles in the same way. I don't know if this
is
true. But anyway,
that,
the Music Box does not have stadium seating. It's just an old-fashioned, fancy, you know, great movie theater. Yeah. You're going to fill it with people who want to laugh, and then either they're going to laugh or they're not. But I think they'll probably laugh, but, you know, maybe they'll laugh in different places now. So we're going to watch Animal House on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll see, you know. Or, you know, is everyone going to crack up a toga again? I mean, there are a lot of funny things in Animal House that I think are still going
to
be funny.
That's a great choice to launch it because that is a movie that has seen a lot of different generations. But it also is a movie that shows up all the time on cable,
right,
where there might be some censorship, some changes in the stuff. And you never really get the sense that you watch that movie without a commercial interruption anymore.
Yeah, it's hard to see that. And again, and when you do, you're just not having the same experience. And there's also a great Chicago connection with that movie because Harold Ramis, that was the first movie that he co-wrote. He was the head writer of SCTV at the time, and he left that to co-write Animal House. And this is the first movie that John Belushi, like Second City's own great John Belushi, was in, and it launched his career. And so there's a really good Chicago connection on there. And it's also just a connection of that kind of humor going mainstream, because it really wasn't. I mean, there were not R-rated, raunchy, frat college comedies that were hits before that one. That was the first. And it was the most successful comedy, I think, of all time when it came out.
Did you pick it because it has a special place of not being funny anymore?
No. We pick stuff because we think it's going to be funny, because otherwise, I mean, we just don't really know, but right. But I'm not going to like intentionally take something. Hey, come see this movie that's not going to hold up at all. I mean, it'll be in the eye of the beholder. Some people will think it's funnier than others, and people will think different parts are funnier than other parts. I mean, like Blazing Saddles is the second movie.
Another
when,
one.
When Blazing Saddles, when I saw Blazing Saddles, and I did not see when it came out, but I was still young enough where the beans campfire scene was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, because it's all these, you know, cowboys passing gas. And I knew about that scene going into the movie. You'd heard about, oh, wait till you get to that scene. And you're just laughing because now it's like Nickelodeon shows have people farting all the time. Right. So it's just different, you know. So people probably are not going to be rolling in the aisles at that, but they're also going to be really startled by all the Frank Rachel humor in that movie because, you know, Richard Pryor co-wrote that movie. And in the 70s, that stuff was much, people were much more upfront about it and less, you know, nervous about it. So that movie would not have been made like it is, was then now.
People are texting in. Feel free to do so. 312-981-7200. What movies held up? What movies didn't? That's what I want to know is what did you go back to and go, oh, geez, what was I thinking? 574 says Airplane, always funny.
Airplane's funny.
It's funny. Also,
and it's funny, too, because like that's a movie that's funny in a sort of gag mm-hmm. sort of way. There's no real, like a lot of the movies that really hold up, like something like Bringing Up Baby, which I actually didn't think was funny the first time I saw it. And I was like, why is this considered such a classic movie? And then I saw it again, and I'm like, this movie's hilarious. What was I thinking? Not thinking it was funny the first time. But part of it is because Katharine Hepburn is so lunatic in it, and Cary Grant is such a great foil for her, that you really get into the characters. And so you can make this argument that a lot of these movies that have really great characters are the ones that hold up. But then you got something like Airplane, where who cares about the characters? Okay. It's just one funny line after another.
Airplane holds up. Top Secret, that's where I'd like to see some calls. I haven't seen Top Secret in a long time. I'll bet you that one.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail, still funny. I will stand by that movie, but you know, Spinal Tap, still funny.
Spinal Tap is still funny, you're right.
Great characters, too.
But those are movies. Those are movies that across the board, we've just Airplane, Spinal Tap, they're going to make the top 100 list. They're going to be in the top 20 comedies of all time. The movies I'm more interested in, you know, we kind of, like we mentioned, Spaceballs. You know, the movies that may not show up in the top 100, but at the time, everyone as a kid was like, oh, my God.
Right.
Like, we just had, I was interested in, okay, so Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Holds up. I mean, I just saw it not too long ago, and I'm like, this is interesting. I don't know if I'd say the same thing about Big Top Pee-wee, which is the other, like, the sequel.
That's a bold statement right there, going with Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but not Big Top Pee-wee. Whoa. Well, you know, I saw Bad News Bears recently. I, you know, good father that I am, I showed my young daughters that movie, because it's, you know, there's the whole girl empowerment thing mm-hmm. in there, but there's also, you know, kids smoking and drinking and using, hurling racial epithets at each other and you know, the drunken coach, Walter Matthau. And again, it's like when that movie came out, the whole template of the misfits who, you know, do well, it wasn't really a template at that part and point. And so it was fun. And I was young when I saw it. And you watch it now and you're like, okay, this is every sports movie ever. It still has this edge to it, which is kind of cool, but it's not drop dead hilarious all the time. And comedies are just paced differently now, too.
It's, you know, it has to do a lot with taste and trends, right? I mean, the idea that these were amazing. Oh, no one's ever seen this before. That's laugh out loud. And then they were copied 60 times. And now you watch them again. You're like, I've seen that before. That seems cliche. And you're like, it wasn't, because that's what they made their name on.
When's the last time you saw Woody Allen's Sleeper? Something like that.
Right.
I mean, I haven't seen it in a while. But the last time I saw it, I remember thinking, this doesn't really hold up so well. You know, a lot of people, when the WGA, the Writers Guild last year, named Annie Hall as the funniest screenplay of all time, which I don't really think of that as the funniest movie. It's just a great comedy. But there were a lot of people debating, like on my Facebook page, and there's another more impetus on this thing, saying, you know, I just watched this recently and it doesn't hold up, or it does hold up, and people have different reactions to it. But it's not just the sort of the marginal movies. It's like the one that's considered the greatest of all time. People
right.
are like, you know.
All right, 312-981-7200. In studio with me, Mark Cairo. He's the former Chicago Tribune entertainment writer and now the curator of Is It Still Funny, which is at the Music Box Theater up on Southport. Four films over the next four Tuesdays. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Susan. Susan, welcome to the download.
Trains, Planes, and Automobiles.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Still funny?
Still funny?
I think so.
Well, that's good.
That's good. That's a good one. I have not seen that movie since it came out, so that would be one I'd have to go back and look at.
Yeah, I got to go back to that one too. But John Hughes, for me, he doesn't hold up great for me in general, but I don't know. I've always been on kind of the outskirts of John Hughes, so I apologize, Chicagoland. I was always more Risky Business than Breakfast Club, but Johnny has his moments, and that one, at least, you know, you got Steve Martin and John Candy. So.
All right, let's try Greg. Greg, you're on the download. How you doing? What holds up for you?
You know, what holds up for me, Arsenic on Lace. The only reason why I say that, even though it's a Cary Grant movie, if you contemporary, you know, make it more modern, and with that screwball family that Cary Grant plays, the straight man in a family full of serial killers, two old aunts who are killing point with poison elderberry wine, Raymond Massey, his brother, is a serial killer, Peter Lorre is his sidekick.
Wow, that's a good crew.
That's a play also, right? I mean, so that's one where theaters still do it.
There you go.
You know, some of those old classic things. We were talking about pacing, and it's kind of funny. Like, His Girl Friday is one of my favorite all-time comedies, and that's like The Front Page, but with a woman instead of two guys, Hildy's a woman. And the pacing of those early, like, Howard Hawks screwball comedies is so fast that it's just boom, 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 the dialogue. And so actually, for a modern sensibility, something like that holds up incredibly well, whereas there are other movies that are maybe from the 70s where just the pacing is just different. So it's not necessarily how old it is, in terms of how well it's going to hold up.
Well, we've heard about the two films. We'll have two more. We'll talk about those. We'll take a quick break. And also, let's program Mark's next season, right?
Yeah,
that's
please.
What we're doing here.
Absolutely.
312-981-7200. We'll be right back. We're back here on the download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Is It Still Funny? I was going to call it a festival, but it's really a series.
It's a festive series.
A festive series showcasing four films over the next four Tuesdays. Is It Still Funny? The curator is former Chicago Tribune entertainment writer Mark Caro.
I think she sounds so elevated. I'm a curator now.
Yeah, curator. Right. So we had so many great texts coming in, people coming through. Let's go right back to the phones. Kathy, what movie holds up for you?
Hi, I would say Tootsie.
Tootsie.
My Man Godfrey.
Oh, My Man Godfrey. Okay, great. Thanks.
So Tootsie is one that I showed my girls who are, 8th, 6th grade. And Tootsie really holds up. And it's funny because, like, the making of Tootsie was such a complete mess. It's one of these, like, disastrous, you know, went through all these stages of falling apart. And then it just turned out to be one of the great comedies. And it really does hold up and is very funny. The music in it doesn't hold up at all. The music is so 80s and so bad.
Keyboard, right?
You were singing a little bit
and
of that.
I'm telling you, it might be you.
Yeah, exactly.
All of my life. Yeah, I remember that.
I
song.
Could join in if you want, but but Tootsie's very good. And but I don't, you know, yeah.
All right, let's try. Let's go to Shannon. Shannon, you are on the download. What holds up for you, Shannon?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yes, that would be a great one to show.
Yeah,
Fast
Cameron Crowe wrote that one.
That's a great. That's a.
See, that one
example.
Has like it has heart in it, you know. And it, I mean, not well. He was married to someone from Heart too, but Fast Times at Ridgemont High is the thing about that movie is that it does have it has these great characters and funny gags in it, but it also is sort of rooted in something. It's not just like a lot of comedies that don't hold up. I think, like, you could look at a lot of hit comedies from now, and you're like, they're not going to hold up because it's just sort of it's just all the gags without really any connection to being about anything.
You could say it. Kevin Hart movies. You could say it. They're not going to hold up. In 10 years, you're going to look
at every
Kevin
Hart
movie. I
love
Kevin Hart.
I'd have to see more
Ride
of them
Along
to actually
not,
have.
Ride Along is not going to hold up.
I'm Ride Along 2, though, like Big Top Pee Wee. Police Academy 6.
Let's go to the text here. All right. 708 says, Caddyshack does not hold up. It is weak. And I have a hard time with that because I've seen that movie probably 5 times. I didn't see it really when I was a kid. I saw it after the fact. What do you think of Caddyshack?
It's our friend Harold Ramis again, his directorial debut. Some of those movies are so shaggy. It's funny. It's like Caddyshack. I haven't seen Caddyshack in a few years. There are just things about it that are very funny, and then things about it that are kind of broad and wobbly. And you don't watch Caddyshack because you think this is like this really wonderfully well-constructed comedy or film. You just watch it because there are things in it that crack you up.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Stripes, I rewatched Stripes recently, and Stripes has great things in it, and then parts of it you're just like, why is this happening?
Well, I read somewhere that movie was written and like Harold Ramis kind of shoved that one together, that when they finish the academy and they go to Germany or whatever it is where they go in Stripes is like two different ideas that they kind of melded into one.
Yeah, that could be. I mean,
it
I know
feels
there were,
that way.
Harold Ramis, I mean, I think he did 6 movies with Bill Murray, and he would just come in and write it for Bill Murray, and that was what worked with that. And fortunately for Stripes, he wrote a part for himself, too, because he was supposed to, you know, Harold Ramis wanted to be in Animal House from what I had read, and it didn't work out. I think he was going to be the Steve, not Steve Guttenberg, what's his face? Peter Riegert character.
Yeah, that's a good character.
And so he actually did get to be in Stripes, and he sort of got to play against Bill Murray, and they're very funny together.
One movie that I showed my son, because I thought it would, I was really going after, I was in a robot phase, was Short Circuit. Does not hold up. Steve Gutenberg,
no,
Alan Sheedy.
Don't
Ali
tell
Sheedy,
me.
Don't tell you that.
Short Circuit.
Yeah, it's and it might
people,
just...
People around listening on the radio are going, no!
Don't say that.
Say
no.
It so.
I was very
Justin.
Excited. It almost got the kitsch factor where you're like, this is kind of great how bad this is.
All right, I've never actually seen Short Circuit.
Oh, you got to see it. It was a box
Well, I'm not going to watch it now.
We've got to watch
now
it now.
Now that you just dumped all over it.
Let's go to Stuart. Stuart, what do you like?
Hi. The Great Race with Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon.
Wow, I have a poster
great.
Of that
Thanks,
movie.
Stuart.
That movie's like 2.5 to 3 hours long. It's like one of the longest comedies ever back when they were doing that. I haven't seen it in so long. I saw that when I was a teenager.
When I heard The Great Race.
It does
race,
hold up?
Yeah. When I heard The Great Race, I immediately thought of Stroker Ace, which was the Burt Reynolds NASCAR movie. Does that hold up? Does anyone see
oh,
that
come on.
One?
Come on. That's one with Lonnie Anderson. Did yeah. that one ever hold up?
I wonder if the Smokey and the Bandit movies hold up. Or the was it Cannonball Run? Cannonball Run movies.
See, did those hold up at the time, though, really?
I mean, they
were sort of fun, but yeah. Did anyone at the time really think, oh, my goodness, these are really classic comedies?
Another movie I just saw that I wanted to show my son and I didn't do it was, and everyone's going to be mad at me, but Rocky III. Rocky III,
oh,
which
because that
was,
one's so funny?
That, no, because, but I was like, that's like a movie. I know it's not, maybe not a comedy, but the idea that I remember that in my head is like, that was the blockbuster. That was a thing. And talk about a movie where you're like, what is happening? How can they punch each other so many times?
In the head
and not fall down. Like, that's all I
know.
I can think about.
It's Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
All right, let me
We did Rocky and then we just skipped all the way to Creed, by the way.
Okay, so let me ask you the other two movies.
Oh, the other two movies. Duck Soup will be on April 26th. And There's Something About Mary will be on May 3rd.
Does that one hold up?
I don't know. I haven't seen that. I reviewed that one for the Chicago Tribune. I gave it 3.5 stars. And I remember at the time, you know, saying this is just really unusually good and that it's sort of raunchy, but also, you know, the characters in it are really, you know, appealing and interesting. And it's just the way the punchlines and everything are set up. I remember just thinking that was a really well-made, well-executed comedy. And then I reviewed about 20 movies that were trying to be There's Something
right,
About Mary.
Right.
And it was just sort of like, ugh, another movie in which dogs are getting launched out windows or something. And Ben Stiller was in half of those too, like Along Came Polly or something.
I love it.
So
yeah.
I'm really
right.
curious how it'll hold up because none of the Farrelly Brothers stuff after that was nearly that funny.
Are you going to take a poll at the end of these?
We're going to lead a discussion.
Yeah.
The idea is that it's going to be... You're gonna watch the movie and then you're gonna comedy people people who like comedies like talking about comedies. So the idea is afterwards we're just gonna talk about it. Say, all right, how did it hold up? And I'm gonna try to come up with some sort of computational way to assess this. But we're gonna talk about did it hold up? What held up? What didn't hold up? And people can chime in. It'll be funny. It's gonna be an interactive thing. And then if it keeps going, we'll move over into the new cool bar area they have over at
the
Music Box.
All right, let's go. I'm going to get all the texts in here and get all the calls. Jim, what holds up?
DC Cab.
DC Cab holds up?
Yeah.
I would think that movie would be on the list for films that would not hold up, but you say it does.
Well, I think it holds up because it touched on a lot of general topics that kind of, don't usually get talked about, but were kind of before their time. Yeah. And then also, sort of delves into that sort of niche, the cab driver, bus driver, sitting around the thing niche, which it has come to be.
Oh,
more
I see.
And more.
Yeah. Like the show Taxi, things like that, where they're sitting around, like in the depot, things like that. Thanks, Jim. Yeah, and Mr. T's in that, so there you go. Mad World, 765 says it. Let's see.
Another really long comedy. It's a really long title, too.
Yeah. 262 says Animal House and Blazing Saddles both hold up. 773 says The Russians Are Coming.
The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming.
I think so. Yeah, I might be missing it. Yeah, Alan Arkin at his best.
Norman Jewison directed that.
309 Heavyweights. 708 Miss Doubtfire. I did see. You know what? That's a great one that I would think automatically. Like, and I just watched that not too long ago, and I was like, this holds up. This is pretty good. But I felt the same thing you were saying. I didn't actually watch. I never saw it the first time around.
See, when I saw it originally, I thought it was all right. So I probably think it was still all right. I mean, yeah. Robin Williams, he was funny. I mean, right. I remember that he did a lot with that role, given what the role was. Sally Field, speaking of yeah. who you were talking about earlier.
847, Only the Lonely. 630, Mad, Mad, Mad World. Vacation, 630. European Vacation, not so much. That's what they say.
Vacation, also directed by Harold Ramis.
Yeah, and... see, Harold Ramis getting a lot of love here. 708, this might be a good place to wrap up. I judge if my son laughs. He's roughly the same age when I saw this movie, Raising Arizona. Vacation, Stripes, Orange County, just to name a few. So he goes off of what his son does, or she, sorry.
Raising Arizona, we tried with our girls, I don't know, about a year ago, and it was like, I've forgotten. It was quite a little more out there than I remembered. But then again, we just did Big Lebowski with them, so what are we?
How did they like that one? That one holds up.
We were just like, don't talk like John Goodman, and you'll be fine. But see, Big Lebowski is actually the opposite of what we're talking about, because I was actually the first screening of Big Lebowski at the Sundance Film Festival.
Didn't like it.
And it was the first movie they'd done after Fargo, and this is where they debuted it. And it was like, I just sort of felt the air sucking out of the room, including myself, because I'm just like, what is this movie? Were they just stoned when they made it? What you know, do they just think it's all... So when you come back to it, you're like, oh, this is really funny. And watching Jeff Bridges and all those stupefied expressions while all this stuff is going on, like, that's what's funny about it. But I would put that in the category of movie that's funnier the second time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Mark Caro is the former Chicago Tribune entertainment reporter who's a curator for the showcase the series that's at the Music Box. Is it still funny? They're showing four films over the next four Tuesdays. This Tuesday, it's Animal House.
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
And there's no Cubs game that night, so you'll be plenty of parking.
There you go.
You know, there you go.
Mark,
come
thanks,
on out.
Thanks so much for coming down. Appreciate
thanks so much
it.
For having me. I love my frying pan. It really turns me on.
There we go. The download here on WGN Radio. The snow's coming down here on Michigan Avenue. Wow, it's sticking a little bit here. Got a text that said in Rogers Park they're talking about 2 inches up there. There you go. Well, it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Cuban with new ideas. But before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. There we go. He's giving us his exclusive business ideas so we can poke holes in it. Give Steve the confidence it takes to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. We didn't have you last week because of the Blackhawks, so it's good to have you back here.
Yeah, it's I think good for your listeners to hear some new, fresh ideas this week too. So I've got some good stuff for you.
Well, I mean, you know, the last couple. I mean, we had a run there where there were a lot of Blackhawks games, and we didn't have the frying pan on Friday night. Then we had a spell of like four in a row.
Yeah,
and that was probably pretty difficult for you because it was a lot of questioning of the ideas.
Well, what it does is it helps me purge some of the bad ideas out of my head. And, you know, I admit it. Every once in a while, I come up with a real dinger. But I think I got a winner tonight.
Oh, okay. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number here. 312-981-7200. Steve Gadlin, what's your idea for tonight's frying pan?
Well, every time I pitch a business idea, I like to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the key to a good product. So my product this week actually doesn't solve any problem overtly, but I think, you know, will still be a pretty good product. So I'm going against the grain here, and I wanted to dip into something more food and beverage related.
Okay, all right.
I've got a beverage idea that we're testing out right now, and it's called corn milk. Now, what's corn milk, you wonder? Well, it's milk, and floating in the milk are fresh, plump kernels of yellow corn, sweet corn. So, you know, we sell it in bottles, and it's milk, 2% milk with the corn floating inside. And while that seems non-traditional, I want you to imagine the mouthfeel. You take a swig of a nice creamy beverage, and then afterwards, after you swallow that in your mouth, you have some fresh and plump, juicy sweet corn to chew on. And while those two flavors may not seem like they complement each other, it's something you have to try to really understand. We're marketing it as a sports drink.
Huh. Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. What do we think of corn milk? Is that what it is? Corn milk?
Yes.
Corn milk. 2% milk with plump, juicy kernels of corn.
Sweet corn.
Sweet corn in there. The text already coming in here. Okay. You know what? Why don't we, you know, the calls are coming in. Pete's going to need a second to screen the calls. Why don't we go to the, why don't we take a break? We'll come back here because it just lit up. And we will take all the calls that call in, yay or nay, on corn milk, Steve Gadlin's newest idea here on The Frying Pan. Stay with us. There it is, the gong that says it's time for The Frying Pan. Steve Gadlin is in studio with us tonight. There we have a new idea, an invention, an innovation from the man who brought you iwantodrawacatforyou.com. Steve, once again, give us the elevator pitch on corn milk.
Yeah, well, corn milk is a new sports drink I'm marketing for right after a workout. It is a glass bottle full of fresh and pure, delicious, refreshing 2% milk with an addition of sweet, plump, juicy corn kernels. Not the kind that turn into popcorn, but the kind you normally eat off the cob.
Right.
But they're pulled off the cob and mixed into the drink. So imagine this delicious, creamy swig right after a basketball game or a run. You swallow the milk, and then you've got some juicy corn kernels to chew on.
Right. Some sustenance.
Well, yeah. Something to chew on, not necessarily for sustenance, but just for interesting mouthfeel texture and real, you know, that corn gives you some great energy for before or after a workout.
312-981-7200. Let's go to the lines. Michelle, you are on The Frying Pan. Yay or nay to corn milk?
I think it's a wonderful, interesting idea.
All right.
I'm a milk drinker myself. So I think it's a great athletic idea with a twist with the corn. It's interesting. People hesitate too much. Put it out there.
All right. Thanks Michelle. That's great. So there you go. Got to write this down. I think we got to write this down. This is kind of new, right?
Yeah.
Let's go to Bob. Bob, yay or nay on corn milk?
This is like a great, great idea.
Wow.
Okay. Thanks, now, a couple of things to think about. One, you know, you want to market it certainly as a local Midwestern type of thing, you know, buying the USA, of course.
Right. Yeah.
Now, a couple options that you might want to consider, you know, all positive. You know, you're saying 2%. You know, you might want to do a non-fat skim milk. You know, get a little, you know, more protein in there. You know, of course, you know, you kind of want to do the Redenbacher thing. You know, like they do with the popcorn. You want to have above average kernel with that.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, bigger than average. I mean, you know, let's look at Thai iced tea. You know, with the tapioca pearl.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, that's
so
a great point.
Got to be that. You know, the other thing is, you know, as you expand, you know, let's look, you know, beyond, you know, just good old cow's milk. I mean, you got the soy milk, you know, the almond milk. I mean, what a vegetarian concept that's going to give you, you know, options, you know, make it flavored. So, you know, I would buy it. I would buy it in a heartbeat.
All right. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that. He gave you a lot of good ideas.
Well, Bob voiced a lot of ideas that I had already had over the last few days of brainstorming. So it's good to hear reinforcement for those. I'm glad we got a yay.
Okay, let's go to Patty. Patty, welcome to The Frying Pan. Yay or nay to corn milk?
I'm going to say nay because I thought it was a joke when I first heard it. I don't even like my corn to touch my mashed potatoes or get any gravy on it. Corn should be corn all by itself.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be in any milk.
All right, thanks, Patty. Go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off there.
No. No, it's okay. It's just I threw up a little bit in my mouth when you said it.
Oh, there we go. I'm glad I kept you on the line for that, Patty. That's great. That gives you.
Well, I think Patty's entitled to her opinion, but until she really tries sweet, juicy, plump corn suspended in 2% milk. There's very little she can really add to the conversation here. I think from, you know, the other two callers I've heard, it seems like an idea that's already energizing a big customer base. So if I were an investor like Mark Cuban listening in, I'd be all about it.
Okay, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Scott. Scott, yay or nay on corn milk?
I say yay on corn milk because, I mean, I think it's a great hydrator. I also think corn is it's a natural tracer food, so it's good for athletes. And, there's a blizzard out here. I'm like, we need to get Daly back to get the snow trucks out here.
That was good, Scott. Thank you for that. A little performance art never hurts a live
but
caller.
But we're counting that as a yay.
But that's a yay, I guess. Right. That was a funny
bit.
It was
into the
All right. So let me see. 224 has, let's see. Here we go. 224. This can be a tradition product to teach people to like foods to touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that's a yay, I guess.
You know, we've thought about it as a tradition product. It's one of the ways we're thinking about it.
219 says this sounds like it could be my second favorite milk behind cactus milk.
I've never had cactus milk, and I would think the prickles would be not good for mouthfeel.
Yeah, right.
But corn milk, you know, just again, you have to imagine that creamy, creamy drink and then those plump, juicy corn kernels that you get to chew on after each swig.
224's got a good question for you, that milk has never flown off the shelf as a sports drink. Why would you choose milk in this case?
Well, I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know about that. I think milk provides calcium and energy, especially pre or post workout. But it's the corn that's the real motivator as a sports drink. Because what people don't know about corn are that it's bursting with flavor and energy that helps athletes.
Oh, okay. Let's go ahead at 312-981-7200. Let's go to Bill. Bill, yay or nay on corn milk?
Hey, that idea is no good. I mean, corn's nothing but a fiber. That's why it just goes right through you and it comes out solid in your number two. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, how would that help a sportsman like myself?
You know, right.
I want protein when I go for my sports drinks.
Right. Okay, okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks, Bill. What about that? I mean, it doesn't seem like corn would be the right food for someone who, an athlete or a sportsman who is using a sports drink.
Well, it has what I like to call an inspirational mouthfeel. Okay, so pre or post-workout, you swig that creamy, delicious milk, and then you get these bursts of flavor when you chew into those juicy, plump corn pieces. So it's more of an inspirational mouthfeel. The type of mouthfeel that makes you want to go win that race, go win that tennis match, or go celebrate after a soccer game.
Right. Here's a question from 773. Wouldn't the corn get mushy sitting in the milk?
You know, it doesn't. It doesn't. Milk is actually, it's not, here's another thing people don't know about milk. It's not a liquid, it's a suspension. And what it does is it suspends the plumpness of that corn. And it keeps that snap, that toothy mouthfeel. And all of that supplemented by some preservatives, patented preservatives and chemicals that we are putting into the corn and the milk. But that's, you know, that won't be a problem with our mixture.
Okay. Okay, here it is. 773 says, it's not a bad idea.
Okay.
Because it's healthy. But why would I buy it when I can make it myself?
Well, that's the thing. You can't make it yourself because we inject the kernels with a very special chemical and we also inject the milk with a special chemical to help maintain that creamy, crunchy mouthfeel that I'm describing. And that mouthfeel really is key. So without our patented secret recipe chemicals, it's not something you can just make at home unless you're going to drink it right away. You'd have to put that corn in and drink it almost instantly. And even then, two or three swigs in, and you're not dealing with a very tasty beverage.
Let's go to Jerry. Jerry, yay or nay on corn milk?
Yay, but with a caution. Okay. Sports drink, it's likely you're going to be drinking it out of a sports bottle. And if that straw that's sticking out of the bottle gets clogged with corn, you can get a hernia from sucking on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for that, Jerry. There could be health concerns.
Not those concerns, because we sell ours in a heavy glass bottle with a very wide mouth. It's more of a jar, so it's a very wide mouth. There are no straws. There are no elements to the glass bottle that can be clogged by the juicy plump sweet corn kernels.
Okay. Well, let's go to Sandra. Sandra, yay or nay on corn milk?
I say nay, because when I'm drinking something, I don't want chunks in it because I might choke on it. Yeah. And they have the idea of corn pops as cereal, and you eat it. You chew it, you eat it. It's in milk.
Right.
So I like it. If it was a cereal idea, that's a different thing.
That's a good point. It seems to be similar to the cereal product. Why make it a drink?
Well, the cereal product has already been invented. So this is a different product that we're ready to to bring to market. You have to put yourself there. This is a product you may not think is great when you first hear about it, but you need to put yourself in the shoes of the athlete, fresh off the court. Fresh off the horse, right off the field, they crack open that jar of corn milk, take a big swig, they get that creamy mouthfeel supplemented by that juicy burst of plump corn kernel. Yeah. Now call in and tell me that's not a sports
drink. The imagery is there. Yeah. There's no doubt the imagery is there.
Well, a lot of how we sell this is through marketing. And that's what I'm doing when I'm creating those scenes. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to put the consumer in the shoes of this fictional character we're creating, this person we think is going to buy that product. And I think that speaks well to investors, too. Marketing is something we're trying with this.
Okay. Well, let's take a break. We'll get to the news, and then we'll come back and we'll get more of your phone calls and your texts. 312-981-7200. Do we like corn milk? I mean, I've gotten a lot of yays here, and I also have a lot of nays that I can't actually say because there's swear words and things like that are in the text. But 312-981-7200, let us know. Right now, corn milk trending. It's a download here on WGN Radio, and it's Friday night, so that means it's time for the frying pan. Steve Gadlin, local innovator and entrepreneur, the man behind IWantToDrawCatForYou.com, which won on Shark Tank, is in studio. He got a development deal with Mark Cuban, so now before he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban, he brings them here to the download. Steve Gadlin, tonight's idea, corn milk.
That's right. We're talking sports drinks tonight, and corn milk is a milk and corn suspension. It's nice, creamy milk with big, fat, juicy, plump sweet corn kernels floating inside. So every swig has a drink and a little snack and a real burst of energy to get you right back in the game.
Okay, 312-981-7200. We've had kind of a mixed review. You started off pretty strong with a lot of yays.
Yeah.
And I want to continue that trend with Ann. Ann, yay or nay to corn milk?
Yes, I think it's a great idea. My children's, I have six children, it's their favorite vegetable. And my sister has six, and it's their favorite vegetable.
Oh, that's
great. So the cookies and milk, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's actually more healthy than cookies and milk. And something that people don't always associate corn with is that it is a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
I know people see it, you know, they think corn dogs. And they don't think of the health benefits of corn. But when you think of corn on the cob or other, you know, corn milk, it's actually a healthy vegetable.
773 wants to know, what's the negative health side to the using this product? Is there any?
No. Well, I'll tell you, some of the additives we've added in there to make sure the corn stays plump, they're not things. Every bottle, we call it a two-serving bottle. And we just suggest you don't finish a full bottle in one sitting. That maybe you space it out over a few quarters, right, of your game. Because if you do drink the entire bottle, that milk and corn and those preservatives, those chemicals we use, will likely cause you to vomit. Now, that's not unhealthy. That's just the body's natural reaction.
It's probably not what you're going for.
And right? I challenge you to find someone making a similar drink who can find a way past that health, you know, that just normal physical trigger.
219 says, I've chugged a can of cream corn after every marathon I've run for the past 10 years, so thanks for the enhancement.
Yeah, that's great, and that's a lot of people do that. That's something a lot of people don't know about marathon runners is, you know, you imagine drinking Gatorade, but if you run in a marathon, you'll see it usually the 20-mile marker. They start handing out cups of cream corn. It replenishes you. Better than electrolytes, it gives you a little protein, and it gives you that flavor burst that really keeps you in the game.
That's really what this product's about. 309 yeah. says, chemicals, no thanks. Not sure why you would admit that there are chemical additives in this product.
Well, legally, we have to post them on the ingredients and the label. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pick any food off the shelf, and I'll tell you what chemicals are in it. There are, chemicals are usually in most foods.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. 708 wants to make a clarification. Corn is a grain. It's not a vegetable.
Well, that's what I was saying. Most people don't consider it a vegetable, but that's because of the bad publicity it gets with things like corn dogs. But if you look at corn, this is another thing very few people know. If you look at corn before it's harvested,
mm-hmm.
it comes in a green wrapper. And that's a vegetable.
312 says, why are you marketing this as a sports drink? You'd be better to say that corn milk is just a drink.
Well, have you seen the sales for Gatorade?
Oh, I see.
You know,
so
Gatorade is really just salt water with food coloring in it. It started when some jokester decided to serve pickle juice to his basketball team. So it's, marketing is telling a story about a product that gets more people to buy it. And that's what we're doing with corn milk.
224 wants to know, what about pea milk or endomame? Not pea, no, not like urine, but peas, like green peas. Why not green peas milk or endomame milk?
That's a great idea. I will say the chemical we use to keep the corn plump absolutely eviscerates peas. Mm-hmm. They dissolve on touch. Corn has a much thicker husk per kernel, mm-hmm. and can really withstand this sometimes damaging chemical that we're using.
630 brings up an interesting issue, and they say this, and I don't take this lightly, but they say this product is dangerous. Hmm. Corn kernels suspended in milk for long periods of time break down into a dangerous chemical compound that can be fatal if ingested. What's your response to that?
Well, I'll say yes, corn milk is dangerous. But that's why we provide very clear instructions on every bottle and every jar on how to ingest corn milk. And I'll tell you, the chemicals we use on top of the corn prevent 80% of that breakdown from even occurring. So the trace elements of those dangerous chemicals that Texter is referring to are very, it's muted. It's a muted effect. Very few instances of death in our testing.
And 224 says, what are we, you know, you've already kind of gone at choking.
Yeah.
But this is interesting. 224 says, you know, consumers know there are chewy chunks in this, you know, but are you concerned at all about choking hazards?
No, I'm not. You know, are people who make any food concerned about choking hazards? Well, sure, we all have to be, because none of us like choking. But we rely on smart use by the consumer,
mm-hmm.
and a heavy disclaimer on the bottle that absolves us of any blame in cases of choking.
773 says, is the corn milk good for heart patients?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think both of the ingredients separate are very good for heart patients. Now, if you are on certain types of heart medication, that will react poorly with the chemical we use to keep the corn fresh and plump. So check with your doctor before you ingest corn milk. We don't recommend it for pregnant women,
mm-hmm.
or people under 4'4".
Okay, 630 says, what's the calorie content? As an athlete, watching my weight, I don't want to drink what I just burned off. That's
a
good question.
I'll tell you know, there are about 900 calories in a serving of corn milk. And 4 servings per 16-ounce jar. So if you were to chug an entire bottle, that's 3,600 calories, which is just 1 pound of weight gain. But let me tell you this. This isn't for calorie-counting athletes, okay? This is for people who want that inspiration, who want to enjoy that creamy, smooth mouthfeel with that plump and chunky chew that follows.
All right, 312-981-7200. When we come back, we'll take the rest of your texts, and we'll also get into some of the more colorful texts. You know, the stuff that if you listen to the Frying Pan Weekly, you know that we end the segment with the with a little bit more of the constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not only just for the product that Steve's pitching, but for Steve's just I would say your confidence.
Okay.
So we'll get into that coming up here. It's the Frying Pan on the download. Stay with us. There it is. It's the Frying Pan here on the download. Friday night, Steve Gadlin, the local entrepreneur and innovator, is here in studio. 312-981-7200. Whether we like or dislike corn milk, that's this week's idea. Essentially a sports drink that is milk with corn in it.
That's right. And I want to say it's milk plus corn plus some chemicals that really give that corn a juicy, I call it plumpy. That's not a word, but I think that's the best way to really describe the mouthfeel once you swallow that milk and you've got that plumpy mm-hmm. corn in your mouth.
708 says, okay, let's get to some of the more harsh stuff. Okay. Creamy milk with corn chunks. You're basically describing vomit.
Well, if all you've eaten is milk and corn, then yes, that's your vomit. But everyone's vomit is different, and I don't see my drink as related to vomit.
773 says, corn is a grain, not a vegetable. That's one of the many tests I passed in my high school class. If you're going to do this for a living, do better research.
Well, no, I think the caller needs to do better research because, again, as I explained, what most people don't know is before corn comes to the store, it's wrapped in a green husk. Mm-hmm. Green equal vegetable, my friend.
773 says, my father worked for Gatorade. Very professional people. Don't call them goofballs. Get your facts straight.
Okay. Well, I'm saying the inventor of Gatorade, who basically said, hey, let's take pickle juice, make it funny colors,
right.
give it funny names like Mountain Berry Booger Time or whatever those silly names are. I mean, that's
right.
that's a bunch of goofballs if you ask me. I'm selling a pure product, you know, right off the vine. That corn comes right off the vine and into the milk and then with chemicals added and then into your kitchen.
847 says, so glopped up milk, yum. And then parentheses, it says, for the less quick, that yum is sarcasm.
Okay, but still unclear if that's a yay or a nay, and I'm leaning toward yay.
Okay, we'll continue. Corn milk, 630 says, corn milk, yellow, almost like drinking mucus. Gross. What? You're gross.
Well, thank you. But it's not like drinking mucus. The drink does not become yellow. The corn stays yellow, bright, almost neon yellow. That milk is pure white, friend.
773 says, yuck, 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 yuck.
Okay.
I'm so sorry, but that really sounds terrible. It sounds like last year's leftover soggy, watered-down mashed potatoes and corn, but in a bottle.
Okay. No potatoes in this drink. And I'm guessing a lot of these people texting are not athletes. I'd like to hear from some athletes.
630 says, corn milk sounds absolutely disgusting. 630 says, just how much pot does this guy consume?
None.
314 says, he injects each kernel? I'm calling BS.
Well, no. We do a soak with the corn before we pull the kernels off the cob. So, okay. Yeah, we would not take the time to inject each kernel with a special chemical. That would, you know.
Okay, I'm just going through. Ukno 210 says Ukno.
Okay.
That's nice. That's a good way to do that. Okay. 724 says, this loser has to go. Why does he get an hour to promote his business every week?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't finish.
Oh.
He's bad at what he does.
Okay. Well, I'm actually good at what I do, I believe. I was on Shark Tank and Mark Cuban invested in my stick figure catcher and company. So, you know, and I'm not here promoting my businesses. What I'm doing is I'm using the WGN radio audience to help brainstorm some, you know, new angles.
Right.
Things I maybe haven't thought of when coming up with these.
815 says, saw this guy in a rerun of Shark Tank. Nerd for sure.
Okay. Well.
Then he says, how many ideas has Mark Cuban bought other than the cat, huh?
just the cat. I haven't actually brought any of these to him yet. Just waiting for a real winner on a Friday night. And if NERD stands for needs everyone's,
right.
Well, I can't think of it, does, but you know, something positive.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Then guilty as charged.
Okay, I'm just making sure I didn't meet. Okay, so now we're okay. So let's go up to the top. There's some good ones here. Okay, so 314 says Gatorade is colored sugar water. Dork.
hold on. Now, if Dork stands for doesn't only. I think it's an initial for something really
cool. All right,
cool.
Here's the two that I wanted to get through. 773. Mm-hmm. Just when I thought he was turning into a decent person, wrong. All caps.
Okay.
Okay. The first caller was nice, polite, and had many good suggestions. Steve sounded almost shocked that the caller was so positive, and I think he actually thanked him. But then after that call ended, Steve flipped back to his arrogant, obnoxious self and said that the caller was just reinforcing ideas that he, Steve, already had. Oh, really? He never mentioned those ideas before. Caps. Does he ever give credit to anyone else for anything? Is he the only brilliant person on the planet? I don't know how he got that into one text.
Yeah, I thought. So I'll tell you this. I give credit where credit is due. I have an engineer who works with me on every project. I won't use his name for his privacy. But he implements Bluetooth technology in almost every invention I have.
And
this, the bottles that hold this corn milk are Bluetooth compatible and will connect to your Fitbit. It was my idea, and he was able to work that out technologically.
So you give credit to him for that idea?
It's my idea. I give credit to him for figuring out. I don't know how this Bluetooth stuff works, but he crams it into whatever I come up with.
Okay.
So,
well, the last one here, and this is from Sue in Glenview, who calls in or texts in each week to give you advice or feedback.
Okay.
She says, Steve, you don't like choking? Really? Yet you come back week after week and choke.
Well, I didn't say I didn't like choking. I think she's taking something I said out of context.
Well, I like that. I thought that was...
Yeah.
Anyway, corn milk. I think Pete shaking his head too. I think that there were some good feedback. People kind of liked it. I think they were interested, as Don said, that he likes, maybe exploring new textures.
Yeah.
So there seemed to be some positivity, but once again, I mean, the haters are going to hate, I guess.
Well, where can I bring samples to your studio audience? Are you doing any remotes?
I mean, we're doing I think we're going to do the Taste of Displains.
Well, why don't I show up with samples?
Why don't we do that? That might be a good idea. That maybe we take this product to the second phase, which is the research and development phase.
Well, come to think of it, I'm waiting on some important FDA certifications.
Yeah, you might not want to give that away.
Yeah. Legally, I don't think I can until I get the sign off on some of the chemicals.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a hypothetical.
I mean, they've been used in medicines, orally taken medicines, but they've never been used in a food product before. So we're just trying to shift the rules and get through with that.
Well, that probably was information that we might want to reveal earlier in the segment, but the concept in general, corn milk, has some legs.
Just picture corn and milk.
Steve Gadlin, I want to draw a cat for you.com. Steve, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Thanks for listening. Thank you. We'll be back on Monday. Next week, the Blackhawks will have their playoff schedule, which we're excited about. But we got some great shows and some great guests lined up. We'll be back next week.